It's time for TWiT. This week in tech, we have an amazing lineup for you. Matt Cutts, the administrator of the U.S. Digital Services and former Googler, joins us. Gina Trapani, longtime host of This Week in Google, founder of Lifehacker and a managing partner of Postlight. We welcome Gina back to our microphones. And the great Dwight Silverman from the Houston Chronicle. Lots to talk about, including banning Chinese telecom gear, privacy. Is it dead? No, it's just resting. The German antitrust case against Facebook, Spotify's podcast move, Angela Arendt's leaving Apple. I can go on and on. Why don't you just stay tuned, because TWiT is next.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT.
This is TWiT, This Week in Tech, episode 705, recorded Sunday, February 10th, 2019. Between the Buns. This Week in Tech is brought to you by Smart Deploy. Smart Deploy allows IT departments to re-image unlimited computer models from one golden image. Search their library for your models and get 15 free licenses with 1 year of support. That's $720 worth of free IT software at smartdeploy.com/twit. And by FreshBooks, the all-in-one cloud accounting solution helping small business owners thrive. Try it free for 30 days at freshbooks.com/twit. And by Atlassian. Atlassian software powers the full spectrum of collaboration between IT teams and the rest of your organization. Visit Atlassian.com/IT to see what IT can be by giving their products a try for free. And by WordPress. Turn your dreams into reality and launch your website at WordPress.com. Get 15% off any new plan at WordPress.com/TWiT. It's time for TWiT! This Week in Tech. Hello, everybody. Leo Laporte here. What a great panel we have to discuss the week's tech news. In studio with me right now, the acting director of the United States Digital Service. Actually, you're an administrator, not a director. I don't know if that's a difference.
I'm no longer acting. I'm very excited.
Oh, you're not acting anymore?
I took the acting right off.
You mean you're no longer pretending to administer?
I'm a real boy. Yes.
Matt Cutts. Yeah, that's great. Well, let's fix your lower third and take that acting. Yeah. We can edit that off right here,
From the last time I was here, I was acting.
Yeah. So what do they knight you? What do they do when they remove the acting?
it's no longer a political appointee position. I am a career position.
Oh, I like that.
So the administrator position is just a career position because you want to get the best technical person you can get as quickly as possible. And so it's a good match.
I think that's fantastic. Yeah. USDS.gov. If you're interested in what they do, read all about it. And if you are... What are you looking for? Coders, people with technical skills?
Designers, engineers, product managers. We even need a technical recruiter or two. So,
oh, interesting.
Yeah, and we even have like one technical recruiter position in San Francisco, so you wouldn't have to move to D.C. Put that out there.
USDS.gov/join. And what you'll be doing is helping government agencies modernize. Well, very famously, you took the VA website and made it usable, which was huge.
Yeah, healthcare.gov, lots of great sites.
Isn't that how it started with healthcare.gov was launched? It had been done by a kind of a hodgepodge bunch of third-party contractors, and it was a mess. Mm-hmm. And people in Silicon Valley said, can we help? Can we just make this better? Is that kind of how it started?
That's exactly how it started, and a lot of people decided to stay behind.
Did you? Is that when you first got involved?
So I was not there for the first healthcare.gov. I started in 2016, so a couple years later.
So just to fill people in who aren't familiar, Matt was one of the early Google employees and longtime Googler. You probably know who he is if you're a webmaster because his webmaster videos are still classics to this day.
Search engine optimization. We don't need to go into that.
Took a sabbatical, which ended up being a departure, and you now work for the USDS.
Yeah.
Thank you for being here. It's great to have you.
Great to be here.
Thank you. Of course, a regular visitor to our This Week in Google show, along with the return of Gina Trapani. Trapani's back. I asked Gina before the show, how do I pronounce your name? Because for years, for the whatever, 5-6 years you did This Week in Google, I called you Trapani.
Yes,
and I think it was the last episode you said, oh, by the way, Leo, it's Trapani.
Well, In Italy, it's not Benin. No, I would have told you a lot sooner. It was like years we did Twig together.
Anyway, well, however you pronounce it, I say it's great. Gina, of course, one of the founders of Lifehacker. For many years, a host on one of our shows. We miss her dearly. She, from time to time, comes back here and on All About Android. And I hope we can get you back on Twig, unless you're avoiding Jeff Jarvis. I don't know.
No, not at all. It's because it's during the business day, and I just, my day is just like meetings, so it's been hard for me to get back on Twig, but it is so great to be here, I miss you all. I love doing the
shows. And your daughter's now six, you told me? I can't even believe
Six years old, first grade.
Gina is a managing partner at a company called Postlight, which is like a code for hire group, right?
Yeah, yeah. We're a digital product studio and we build apps and websites and kind of big. We try to shoot for the kind of those big transactional digital platform products that power lots of different products. So we're here in New York City. We've worked with clients like Vice and like Bloomberg. Nice. We just recently rebuilt Audubon Society's birdwatching app for both Android and iOS. You can get those in the app stores now. It's been a lot of fun. Really,
Do you get your hands dirty in code?
You know, I up until about March of last year, I was an engineer on the team and allocated to projects. In fact, I helped build out the Players Tribune, which is one of our one of our clients, Derek Jeter and Kobe Bryant's sports site. But I got to a point where, you know, my partners were saying to me, you know, like we really could use you in the room with clients and with prospects, and can you help us scope out new projects? So I'm not pushing code on a daily basis anymore, which has been a weird transition. But I really. Just, I get to spend a lot of my time talking to people about their problems and what they want to build and why they want to build it. And sometimes they work with us and sometimes they go with someone else or they take it internally. But I really enjoy just being at that level, solving at that altitude.
We're thrilled that you could be here. Also joining us, another guy who's been with our network for so long, Dwight Silverman of the Houston Chronicle. He actually took a hiatus for tech for a couple of years, but you're back.
For a little bit, yep. Back. But I'm back. I'm doing... my primary job is managing the websites for our business department, and I also still manage the Tech Burger, which is our technology site. And that story there, I bought a new car, and when I shop for cars, I like to review the tech, and so that's what I did with this particular one. That car is awesome.
The Toyota CHR. Is that a crossover? What is it?
Yes. It's not very well known. In Europe, it's really popular. It's only been here for 2 years. You look at it and you go, that's a Toyota?
Yeah.
And because it's like actually sexy. And the idea that I would drive a car like that is just kind of like blows my mind because I had a Corolla before.
Always a Toyota,
which
is
the opposite
man.
Of sexy, opposite of sexy.
Did you ever consider electric?
You know, I looked at it. I bought a condo here in Houston. And
that's a problem, right? Because if you don't have a charger in the parking garage,
right.
You're out of
luck. There's no way to charge it. And so I looked at it, and when I started out shopping, I was looking at cars that were, you know, inexpensive but fairly technically loaded. And I looked at the Honda Insight. I looked at the Prius. I looked at the new Jetta, which is a very nice car and very, it has a full glass cockpit in it at the higher end trims. And I spotted this when I was looking at another Corolla and said, oh, I need to drive that. And I drove it twice and fell in love with it and bought it. And what's interesting, the most fascinating thing about it to me is that it has Apple CarPlay, and there's a picture of it there in the story. But usually when you have CarPlay, there's also Android Auto, and there's no Android Auto on the Toyota.
Oh, that's interesting.
They're going to introduce it next year, but I'm dying to figure out why they
did not. Or
even how. Right. How do you not do that?
Yeah.
So, Dwight, I have to ask, does Toyota still use Bing as the search engine in the car?
You know, I'm
asking for a friend.
Not that there's anything wrong with that.
Not that there's anything wrong with that. I just want to know, like, what search engine your car uses is kind of a thing for
Does
for
your
me.
Car have a search engine?
Toyota used to have Bing. I don't know if they still
How
do.
How would you search?
It searches. It uses, like, when you want to search for gas stations or you want to search for. But it doesn't do that, I don't think, now. I haven't really played with the apps in Intune 3.0, which is their software, okay, to the extent that I can tell where it's coming from. But I think most people use what's on their phone.
Okay.
And I assure you that Bing is not on my phone.
Okay. You know, now I can
get a
Toyota.
How do you feel about DuckDuckGo? Just asking for a friend.
So Matt, I have an ask for you. Since you're doing this now, my 89-year-old mother, who has in the past couple of months has had great reason to dig into the Social Security Administration services. Mm-hmm. Can you please do something to make the Social Security Administration's website friendly to people who are 90?
Oh, my goodness. That is such a great question. So I will just say, the CIO at the Social Security Administration, his name is Rajiv. He came over from the IRS, has been doing a lot of stuff to try to improve the quality of the experience there, and I would love to have enough folks where we could go over and help out over Social Security.
Do they have to approach the USDS and say we'd like some help? Or
it's a little bit of a give and take because we have to decide how to allocate scarce resources, you know, amongst areas where you can have the most impact. But, you know, if you look at SSA, they've got a
big
ton
area
of annuitants and beneficiaries, yeah, you know, all federal employees, retirement. So it's a very high impact administration. So
And it's also highly used by people who are much older and technologically challenged.
Right.
And if there was a way to take it so, you know, someone who was not necessarily technologically astute could go in there and figure it out quickly and without a lot of handholding, that would be
that's harder
a
than
great
it sounds,
benefit.
By the way, that is the number one challenge in UI design.
It is hard. But yeah, I'm actually on a it's called a technology modernization board with Rajiv, and so I see him about once a week or so. Okay. So I'll, you know, we'll have some stuff to talk about.
Look at that! Talk about instantaneous results, Dwight.
I know.
Silverman. Well
Matt
done.
On the fire under Matt in the first 5 minutes.
Request filed.
And as soon as we're done here, I'll call Mom.
Say, I talked to somebody in the government, Mother, on your behalf.
So I have a question for Matt. There may be another shutdown on the way.
Yeah.
Have you gone around to all the federal government sites and said, renew your certificates ahead of time?
Okay. So
there were something like 18 federal sites whose certificates expired during the last shutdown, which meant they were insecure.
Right.
In some cases, they were smart enough to say, no, you may not, no, shalt not pass. In others, you would be asked to enter the site and enter important information. This was a big problem.
Yeah. Well,
as if it was unanticipated.
Well, and the crazy thing is that now you can set it up to auto-renew and you can use things like Let's Encrypt. So this doesn't have to happen.
Do the feds use Let's Encrypt?
It is possible to set those sorts of things
up.
I
would have thought you'd have to have a purchase or, you know, a special GPO and all that stuff.
It's always harder in government. And like when I was at the Pentagon, Let's Encrypt didn't do .mil. And so, you know, you got to work out some of that. But it is, you know, the government is catching up. It's taking time, but the government is catching up. So it is possible to set things up such that, you know, just because you're not with hands on the keyboard, the certificate
can renew. Automatically
renew.
Yeah,
that's right.
So what do you think? If there's another shutdown, are we going to see a repeat? Or
we will see a repeat, yes. Because
it's not there yet.
People, they had 3 weeks, you know, to try to get ready.
A lot of time.
It takes a little longer to get ready.
There's other stuff to do, I imagine, in the interim. Well, it's good to – geez, this is nice. We've got some real experts on the panel today. I almost feel like I should go pick some special stories, not just the usual run-of-the-mill stuff. So let me think here. I wanted to ask, can you talk about Google these days, Matt, or do you have to recuse yourself?
I have sold all of my Google shares as part of joining the government. So I can, you know, I'm as a government official, you can't endorse any specific, you know, product or company. So got to be a little careful that way. But I can talk about Google.
This week, Google announced, Alphabet announced its fourth quarter and fiscal year results. And I'm glad to have your expertise here because the things that people always want to look at is not how much money Google made, what its revenue was, what its operating income was, but the cost per click.
Mm.
And this is how Google ultimately makes most of its money is, you know, the cost per click. And it's been dropping dramatically. In fact, it did drop year over year 29%.
Mm-hmm.
Is that something Google worries about?
There's a lot of people at Google who pay attention to that, for sure. But it's not just clicks on Google properties. It's also clicks on the partners that Google pays.
Yeah.
So that's kind of interesting. The thing that struck...
The cost per impression on Google network members' properties, non-Google properties, has actually been going up.
Yeah.
So that's good news, right? Mm-hmm.
Well, there's a lot of different ways you could interpret things. So, for example, in the earnings, one thing that I thought was interesting is it looked like their capital expenditures were way up. So a lot of people might be like, oh, if you're spending more money on your hardware, is that a bad thing? But sometimes that can be a leading indicator because people are saying, oh, we have a lot more stuff to do with our data centers, so we need to build or buy right. more machines.
Right. So, is Google building new network operations centers at this time? Do you know?
They are always building out more infrastructure. God,
it's the infrastructure for Google, Facebook, Microsoft, Apple, Amazon in particular. Just kind of just mind-boggling. I read a story today that Amazon owns more square footage. What was it? It was some huge number of square footage, mostly for fulfillment. In fact, AWS is only about 10% of that. Mm. Let's see if I can find that story. I don't think it was in our rundown because it broke this morning.
Well, and there was a story in the rundown about Kashmir Hill, who tried to remove the tech giants from her daily life. And so many things were powered by AWS or various other technology companies that she couldn't transfer a large
Wasn't
file
that an amazing story?
For a podcast. Yeah.
So actually, that's a good one to talk about. Mm-hmm. Kashmir's great. She's writing for Gizmodo now. She said she wanted to try. She'd been slowly going on a diet, slowly eliminating the big five from her daily life. But when she finally cut out all of them, she says it was hell. She got a tame hacker to, I guess, install a blocker or whatever. She bought a Purism laptop, which is a Linux freedom first laptop, a Nokia feature phone because you can't buy iOS or Android. The big five for her were Amazon, Facebook, Google, Microsoft, and Apple. She'd cut them out one at a time, but in week six, she blocked them all. So she had a network tool that would even go to the point, like she tried to use Dropbox, but Dropbox uses AWS. Mm-hmm. So the network tool blocked Dropbox.
Yeah.
That's Amazon. It's not an Amazon company, but they use AWS.
Mm-hmm. Oh, and the Nokia phone is my favorite.
Isn't that a beautiful, that's a lovely. Well, and that was one of the problems. Just she had to text using, do you remember, folks? If you want to type cat, you have to type 111. Pause 1666666, and then you'd get cat. Yeah. And then they had T9, which was a prediction mm-hmm. service, which was terrible. She didn't enjoy that, apparently.
I'm impressed that she attempted this.
Yeah.
Absolute performance art. I can't imagine. It must have been absolute hell. I mean, everything we touch every day goes to those big companies.
And in ways you don't realize. I mean, that's what I think the real import of this article is. She couldn't listen to music in her car because she had a Ford Sync system mm-hmm. with the Microsoft car. Mm-hmm. Had to turn that off.
Yeah.
We are so dependent, and it's just five companies. That's the thing that's really scary. I don't mind being dependent on 100 technology companies. But when it boils down, and actually, you probably could just say, you could probably take a couple of these out of there. Mm. Like, just say Google, Amazon, and Facebook, and it would still be almost impossible to use the internet, right?
Particularly Amazon because of Amazon Web Services.
And Google, because trying to live without Google.
Right. I think it would have been interesting, you know, she wanted to go from top to bottom on, you know, what she didn't use. So she didn't want to use Amazon Web Services. But what if you simply avoided their consumer facing products? And, you know, if you had to go through pipes that they owned, fine. I wonder what kind of exercise that'd be
a lot easier. She was being very pure. Well, I'll give you an example. They're a sponsor, a product called Helm, which is a home email server. Mm-hmm. It's a really clever idea, solves a lot of the problems. But guess what? It runs everything through Amazon S3. So I would have to stop. She ended up using Proton Mail. I think she's safe there because its servers are in a mountain in Switzerland. So, but yeah, I mean, Gina, you probably wouldn't have a job if you couldn't use those five.
I mean, we deploy everything for all of our clients to AWS or Google Cloud. I'm sure even the other services like Heroku and Linode and all, they're also using, like managed hosts also use in the background those services. Mm-hmm. It would be very, very difficult.
So is it Richard Stallman level crazy to say, let's just get rid of all this stuff? Or should we all be really concerned because we're so dependent on it now? Obviously, it's not easy to get rid of it.
I thought it was interesting that she saw the best and the worst. Like, on one hand, she tried to record audio and send it to a podcast and ended up having to use the dark web.
Right.
Right? Like, she, nothing
she had to use a Tor-based browser to share the file.
That's and couldn't even download the tool. Had to, like, rsync it from someone else's
Linux
network.
Oh, yeah, she had to build the code from scratch. Okay.
But it does sound like by the end, she got to a more deliberate space where she said she didn't know what time it was because she doesn't use her phone all the time now and like more deliberate and using the technology as a tool instead of being, you know, in wombed by it, you know, cocooned by it is that's
I'm
something.
Sure a Buddhist monk in a vow of silence is in a much more quiet space too. I'm not sure that the
whether
world
it's worth it.
Well, it's not even whether it's worth it. Can the world survive? I mean, you in order to do this, you have to withdraw from the world. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's really what you're doing. Yeah. And can we survive? I feel like I'm a little worried, Dwight. I feel like these companies have an immense amount of power now in our lives.
Well, if you know, the way we live online. We live with our smartphones. You know, we're doing this podcast over the internet. Where there's all kinds of products on this computer. There are people in rural areas who use a lot less of it and live day to day just fine, and they don't necessarily rely on it as much. But if you're all in on the 21st century and the way the 21st century works, as she showed, it's pretty much close to impossible. I think you could spend a lot of time worrying about it, but, you know, just use it.
What if I said, instead of the big five, let's take China out of our technology? Can you do that? No, this whole studio would be shut down, right?
Wasn't there a book someone tried to not buy anything made in China? It was also a similar thing. Like, it was life was so much harder. I mean, we're all interconnected. And I mean, if we're going to work in this industry and participate in life just the way Dwight said, the way that we do, it's these five companies are kind of inevitable.
This is this brings us to Huawei. And, man, I am still on the fence on this. Mm. So Huawei, the Chinese company that manufactures, it's the number two or three, depending on the month, smartphone manufacturer in the world. Samsung and then Huawei and Apple trade places. Mm-hmm. It's the number one by far 5G equipment manufacturer in the world. And the United States has basically said you may not use Huawei gear. Mm-hmm. It started by telling the Defense Department, but the latest story is that the White House plans to issue an executive order right in front of Mobile World Congress, this is from Politico, that will ban Chinese telecom equipment entirely. Mm-hmm. Now, fortunately, there is somewhere you can go. There's Ericsson and Nokia. Mm-hmm. They are making 5G gear. Mm-hmm. But the president of Huawei, actually, it wasn't the president. It was the U.S. President, I guess, of Huawei, mm-hmm. was very upset. He says, we've denied this again and again. There is no evidence of the Chinese government interfering with our business or using our equipment to spy on anybody. This is a political decision. And this is where I'm on the fence, because I think it is a political decision. And yet there's some merit, there's some potential that if the Chinese government went to Huawei, whether Huawei is you know, working for the government or not now, if at some point the Chinese government said to Huawei, incidentally, we'd like to have access to all your switches everywhere in the world, they really couldn't say no. So there is a threat. There's no, I don't think there's any evidence that, well, there is a little bit. There's a Huawei executive was arrested for spying in Poland. Huawei fired him immediately. A Huawei CFO is in jail in Canada, about to be extradited to the United States for fraud. What do you guys think? Go ahead, Gina. We'll let you start. That was mean.
Go.
That was mean.
Yeah, this is a tough one, Leo.
Is it technical or is it political? And is it smart to do, is it prudent to do it, whether it's politics or not?
Are technical and political different things? I mean, technology is inherently political. I'm going to start getting feminist here.
That's good. I like it. I like it.
Technology is political. Both. That's all I got. This is a tough one.
Yeah.
This is a real tough one.
It's to a certain extent, I think it's not necessarily new. I know that in the Obama administration, I think you know, people as far back as James Clapper were warning about Chinese hardware, and but as far back as the Obama era, they were not offering details. They, you know, it was national security, and that you know, that was a curtain over any kind of detail they would offer. And you know, I think that if you're skeptical and if you don't take things at face value, you can look at this and say, yeah, it's political. But if you're also technical, you also know it's possible.
Yeah, that's why it's difficult, isn't it?
Right. And then, and that's what makes it difficult. I, you know what, I think in term, it may be political and it may also be economic, because if you want to give U.S. allies who make this gear in the 5G run-up to give them an advantage over Huawei, you certainly could use your political muscle to block that and allow Ericsson and the others, and also Samsung also makes 5G gear, and you know, allow them essentially to get a head start in the United States and in Western countries. So it may also be economic.
Well, it's also interesting that it, I mean, I think looking at it through the lens of just the United States and Huawei is interesting, but Australia has banned them.
They're working with them still, though.
Sure, but New Zealand as well has said. Yeah. So
Canada is going to spend $1 billion to pull Huawei gear out.
So it's, you know, technology is political.
It's complicated. And yet, you hear this, but there are many Chinese companies, right? Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And much of our equipment, my iPhone's made in China. Mm-hmm. So is Huawei being made an example? This is an editorial from a couple of weeks ago in the Wall Street Journal. The U.S. can destroy Huawei. It's a risky but powerful way to show Beijing stealing no longer works. This is an opinion piece, we should point out. But he says the big point of the Huawei story is it's based on stealing ideas from the West, including a Cisco router. In fact, an early Huawei router design was shown to have been stolen from Cisco, right down to the typos in the instruction manual. They attempted to steal Tappy, the robot, from T-Mobile. Well, how dare you? It's a robot for testing phones. It taps on them. So maybe this is a, I don't know. I feel like if you're going to say, well, we can't use Chinese equipment because the Chinese company might be at some point beholden to the Chinese government, that's going to really become a problem. That's something you can't do.
Well, remember the Bloomberg story about Supermicro, the finding the chips, and there has not been anybody who's been able to, you know, come behind and duplicate that story. Everybody involved has denied it. Bloomberg has not issued a retraction or
it's
a correction on it. It's a very strange story, but I think I use the word paranoid. I think there's a level of paranoia there, whether it is justified or not, who knows, but things are definitely weird.
The other point is that we are really all interdependent.
Yeah,
that's what technology does. That's what the Kashmir Hill story shows us, and it's not limited to those five. We're interdependent nation to nation, and it's kind of a tangle we can't undo.
You know what I think the answer is?
What is it?
It's blockchain. No, I'm just kidding. The answer is not blockchain.
Thank God,
the answer
is not. Thank God blockchain is here. Well, I didn't mean to bring up something so intractable, but it's just an interesting story. I don't know what to think about it. And it's clear that as far as the U.S. is concerned, they want to put Huawei out of business.
Don't you think at this point, if there was something in the code that would allow that, or if there's something already there, that someone would have reverse engineered it and found it by now?
Yeah, but
let's hope and wish. But
the problem is these routers, which are really they're hardware and software combinations. They have a lot of software. The software is updated all the time.
Yeah.
So even if you, actually, this is an interesting point. In the old days when routers and switches were hardware only, that's exactly what happened.
Right.
You'd go through it. You'd make sure it did what it said it would do and nothing else.
You could freeze it.
You'd freeze it and it'd be done with.
Yeah.
But so much software is involved these days, and that software is updated so frequently, it's, I think, impossible to do an audit.
Well, and you'll see a lot more stuff. Like, Google has started to talk about how much it's doing software-defined networking. So you can...
Exactly.
So, if you take that to its logical extreme, then the hardware is sort of a thin substrate, and the real power is in the software. And then yes, the software can always be changed. It's always malleable. And so it's who holds the keys, who can update that software, who can sign and cryptographically vouch for that software. And if, you know, a particular provider wanted to change the functionality, it's not clear how well people would even notice.
I'm quoting David Sanger, who is a security correspondent for the New York Times. He has a book called The Perfect Weapon: War, Sabotage, and Fear in the Cyber Age, that talks about this. And I heard an interview with him on Fresh Air with Terry Gross, and that's exactly what he said. It's so much software that at this point, there'd be no way to validate it.
On the bright side, we do get to live in a William Gibson future.
It's a little more dystopian.
Science fiction is here.
It is here. Really, that's kind of lately all the shows boil down to is dystopia, utopia. Dystopia, utopia. Which is it? Which is it? A little bit of both. Gina's right. A little bit of both. It's both.
A little bit of both. I mean, for me, just if you think about this too much, it will drive you absolutely crazy and paralyze you. Like, I think that some paranoia is healthy, and I think we have to be aware. But also, sometimes I just have to be like, okay, we're going to move forward. I'm going to trust that there are people looking through this code and checking it, but I also have to expect that huge bugs and vulnerabilities are going to show up, whether that's through other governments or just, you know, bugs in the software, and how do we respond to that? And you hope that things get better, that the checkpoints get better, right? But you're just kind of crossing your fingers and hoping.
Is there anything that an end user should do for prudence sake, that just to protect herself? I mean, is there any? I mean, what I came away with from Kashmir Hill's article is just give up. For instance, get rid of Facebook would be a good start. Get rid of maybe. I don't know what else. Instagram, if you're going to get rid of Facebook, Instagram, and WhatsApp, that might be a start. But then I often feel like, well, but then it doesn't matter because I'm carrying in my pocket a surveillance device with a microphone, camera, GPS that's always broadcasting back to bad actors like my cell phone company, who will gladly sell it to the highest bidder. Mm. So, it feels pretty hopeless. You'd have to throw out a lot of tech. You'd have to become the Unabomber and just kind of live in a cabin in the woods. You don't have to send bombs. But you'd have to live in a cabin in the woods to get away from all of this.
It's interesting to me how few, like, thinking about the system level, how you would make things work better. What if you had more journalists with a better view into technology? The Brian Krebs of the world.
I love that. We need 100 Brian Krebs.
Right,
I agree
with
you.
Who can spot the problems and when they find that carriers are selling your location to bounty hunters, then that will, cause
pressure.
He's been
a great whistleblower.
Stop. Yeah.
We need more whistleblowers. Yeah. That might be it.
Definitely more whistleblowers. Yeah. But also, like, opting out of things like Facebook, Leo, it doesn't matter, right? Because, like, we're all connected, and you shared your email address with other people. Facebook's building a profile of you.
Right.
Whether or not you participate, you might as well control that story, right? Like, you can, make sure your passwords are good and unique across your sites. There's lots of things that you can do, right? But there's also a lot of things that you can't prevent. You just have to sort of know, like, okay, if I'm going to participate in this, if I'm going to have this device on my person all the time, then here's what that means.
Was McNeely right? Privacy is dead. Get over it. He said that 20 years ago, but I think
privacy is not dead, but it has changed. It has changed.
It's how just I expected him in that.
It's dead. It's just resting. privacy has changed to the point that you have to be more vigilant over it than you used to. And I think there are things that you could do and in your behaviors that you can take that can protect your privacy. But I also think, you have a whole generation who's growing up in this, where they just assume that everything is out there. And I think their expectation of privacy is very different than what ours is.
You know what it reminds me of?
It's much lower.
Do you remember you always used to make fun of when Eric Schmidt would say particular things about going up to the creepy line or whatever?
Yeah.
But, he said, well, teenagers will have the point where, they turn 18 and their social media just all gets erased and they change to a new
name.
That's
a good idea.
And, like, Snapchat kind of is creating that a little bit.
Although Snapchat is now looking at making permanent data because there is a demand for that too.
Yeah.
And after all, as you know, Facebook saw a threat from Snapchat, so they stole many of Snapchat's most popular features and put it in Instagram, and all the kids said, oh, look, shiny. I think kids are aware of this. I think they're smart. What are you going to tell your daughter? She's six now.
Tell her about how she shares things. Oh, we're going to have a lot of conversations about that once she is, you know, has her own accounts and that kind of thing.
That's only a few years off.
Yeah, that's only a few years off. We're gonna just talk about it a bunch. I mean, I think it's I want her just be to know, and to understand the possible implications of what she's doing, the difference between permanence and what it means when she puts a picture of her friend or of other people too. Like I don't share a whole lot of photos of her online, certainly not publicly, just because I want her to make that choice. But yeah, just kind of instilling those best practices. But again, like she's going to have a phone. She's going to be, you know, all of her location and all of her data is going to be out there as well. I know that.
I get a lot of lately, you know, and I'm, by the way, there's no one that lives more in public than me. I mean, I have nothing to hide. I give people my phone number, my address, everything. But I am now starting to get a queasy feeling. The other day we were in L.A. We rode a Jump bike, which is Uber's new electric bike rental. Mm-hmm. Really cool. Mm-hmm. Except that even as I'm using the phone to sign in and connecting it to my account, I'm thinking in the back of my head, well, now Uber knows everywhere I'm going on this bike. Mm-hmm. And maybe I'm showing up on the God. Remember they had that God app that would let you know wherever you
God Uber, view.
God view. And it's a low-grade, queasy feeling whenever I use this stuff. And I don't know if that's a good thing. Maybe we'll just learn to tune it out.
So the question is, Leo, what does it matter that they know? What does it matter that Uber knows that while you're using their product? What does that matter?
I agree with you, and that's the question I always raise. You've heard me say this many times. Well, so what? And I know so what, but I'm still getting that queasy feeling because there's this psychological thing of, well, but people can spy on me or follow me around or know where I am or... Mm. I worry that this is not good for our mental state in the long run. Mm. It sure wouldn't be good to be a paranoid in this day and age.
No.
You'd have lots of evidence.
True. So what's interesting is, you know, you talked about, you know, your 6-year-old daughter, Gina, and you know, eventually she'll have a phone. When my kids were that age and I was reviewing computers for the Houston Chronicle, I kept all the computers in one room and I let the kids use the review machines because it was interesting and instructional watching them use it. But our computers were all in one room. I could see what they were doing all the time. They didn't have computers up in their rooms. And that was really useful because I could say, oh, well, I see what you're doing. Let's talk about that. You can't do that anymore with a smartphone.
No, they have their computers.
You know, you cannot limit it at all.
Yeah.
And so that's a real challenge for parents.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, and also I'm setting this expectation with my daughter too, that knowing this information is kind of normal. Like I commute home from Manhattan to Brooklyn on the train or the bus. And when I leave the office, I use City Mapper. I send a City Mapper link to my partner who then brings up a map. A live map where she and my daughter can see,
that's
you know,
so
how
cool.
close I am to home and what time I'm going to get there.
Yeah.
So literally as I'm walking up
Isn't
to my door,
great?
My daughter, it's great. She runs down the hallway to give me a hug because she can see the little green guy in City Mapper where I am. So, I mean, to her, she's 6 years old. Like the idea that she can see exactly where I am on my commute, that's completely and totally normal. And it would be terrible if they couldn't track my location because they wouldn't know what time I'd be home for dinner, you know? So
and that's, by the way, why you're going to give her a phone the minute you can.
Yeah.
Because then if
she can see where she is. Yeah.
But not only that, if she needs help, she can call. If she's stranded, she can call.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Mm. It's true. We write our phone number on her arm when we go to like really crowded places the county fair or whatever and say, "Okay, if you get lost, you go find somebody with a phone and have them call." She's going to have her own phone for that reason. Mm-hmm. So it's going to be really interesting. I think she's going to have very different ideas and expectations and worries. I just don't think she's going to be that paranoid about sharing that information.
No, she probably isn't. It's just the world the way it is.
It's interesting that Apple's decided to make privacy like a competitive advantage and to talk about that. And I think that sets the trend where more so in the future, people will be making these judgments about the companies that they choose to you know, do business with based on, you know, maybe they won't read the full end user license agreement, but they will say, I'm not sure that I trust this company as much as that company. And it's still possible to take one out of the big five and cut one out. Like if you choose, you're going to deactivate your Facebook account or something like that. You can still do that at this point.
Yeah.
And
it's not too late, in other words.
Right. And if people have to compete, if people get to compete on privacy, I think that will help quite a bit.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree. Although Apple's the only one at this point who can reasonably say.
I think
others might.
Google, you know, has done a little bit, not as much as Apple, where they can say, okay, you know, these are the only times that we're going to hand information over to the police, or we're going to allow you to know if legally something's been removed from the search results.
Google's interesting because maybe they're not so different than Apple. I'm sure Apple's collecting all this data. They just don't do anything with it, maybe. I don't know. But Google decided, well, we're going to collect data, so let's be transparent about it. And I do believe that they're very transparent about what data they collect, right? You can go to the dashboard. Mm-hmm. They're not hiding anything. Mm-hmm. And I think it's their hope that, well, if we don't hide it, people will feel more comfortable sharing it. Mm-hmm. I don't know if that's true, though.
Do you know how many people know about the dashboard? It's a tiny percentage of people who know about that.
I was just
going to
say that.
And when they see it, they're freaked out.
Well,
they see it, they're freaked out.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, I knew about it. And whenever I go look at it, which is not that often, I'm always like, oh, right, yeah, they have all this. It's interesting that Apple is positioning itself as the company that respects your privacy. And I mean, I've definitely heard debates about, you know, paying for that. Like you pay for a premium for Apple hardware and you're also paying for privacy, right? So Facebook's free and part of what you pay Facebook is with your data. And I think people feel that way about Google as well. Although it is interesting that I think that some of Apple's products suffer because it doesn't collect and use data as well as Google does. Like Apple Maps is terrible, right? Do you think that Apple Maps would be better if it was the same kind of approach as Google? Maybe.
Well, let's take a break. And when we come back, we're going to talk about how some countries are trying to stop this. German regulators, this is a great link baity headline from Wired, Emily Dreyfus. German regulators just outlawed Facebook's whole business model. maybe not. Let's talk about it. Our show today brought to you by a brand new, I want to welcome a brand new advertiser to the show, Smart Deploy. If you're in IT, you know all about this notion of, hey, I got 100 machines to set up. I'm going to create a golden image and blast it to all the machines. But there's problems. Those machines all have to be identical, right? Smart Deploy allows IT departments to re-image unlimited computer models from one golden image. It's a one-click user data migration for simplified migrations, zero-touch network deployment, imaging over the internet, application deployment, to make your project stress-free. But the cool thing is these platform packs, and they include 1,200 different platforms, Lenovo, HP, Dell, all the major OEMs, inject drivers into the image so that it will work on that machine. You make one image. When you need to support a new model, you download the pack, you deploy your golden image, and boom, you're set up. And as I mentioned, it's not just for entire operating systems. You could have all the line of business apps that you use and have it in an image that's just deployed over the internet, deployed over the network. And I mean it when I say deployed over the internet. You can use Dropbox or a cloud service and deploy it there. Smart Deploy is the most reliable, easy-to-use solution. Over 2.2 million endpoints now. This is awesome. It's the only solution, the first solution to offer imaging over Wi-Fi, which means you can manage remote users and satellite offices even if you're not on the same network. You could deploy images, apps, updated drivers. Yeah, you could update drivers too via Google Drive, Dropbox, OneDrive, OneDrive for Business. It's very easy to use. You don't have to be an IT guru to use it. They've got step-by-step wizards that'll guide you through the process. And complicated steps like sys prep are handled for you automatically. No ramp up, no training necessary. You can migrate 100 computers to Windows 10 in under an hour because it's got multicast. Isn't this great? Seattle-based support team made up of imaging and Windows experts. They're just an email or phone call away. Widely used. Nissan uses it. UCLA, Nintendo. Smart Deploy. Make that dreaded task of computer imaging a little less painful. By the way,
they're giving away 15 free licenses, including a year of support, at smartdeploy.com/twit.
This is a great way to try it out. That's $720 worth of free IT software. And if you work at a company with 50 to 50,000 computers and go to smartdeploy.com/twit, you'll get those 15 free licenses with 1 year of support and be able to try it out. And I think you're going to love it.
German regulators just outlawed Facebook's whole ad business.
This comes from the German Federal Cartel Office. On Thursday, the company's antitrust regulator, this is an antitrust thing, ruled that Facebook was exploiting consumers by making them agree to data collection in order to have an account. Facebook has 1 month to appeal. In 1 month, they will have to stop. Facebook, this is a quote from Andreas Mundt, the president of the SCO. Facebook will no longer be allowed to force its users to agree to the practically unrestricted collection and assigning of non-Facebook data to their Facebook user accounts. This comes, I think, as Facebook's considering, apparently, merging WhatsApp, Instagram, and Facebook user data across all three, which means billions of people. It's not clear what Facebook wants to do about this. We disagree, they write in a blog post, with their conclusions and intend to appeal. And I think this is the line that has the threat, so that people in Germany continue to benefit fully from all our services. It would be a shame if you were no longer able to use Facebook in Germany. This is an interesting approach. And see, when we have these conversations, as we did in the last segment about privacy, it always comes up, well, maybe we should just regulate it. But honestly, this is how Facebook works. Facebook has 32 million monthly active users in Germany. That's 80% market share. The regulator says that makes them trust, and that gives us the jurisdiction to oversee their data collection practices. As a dominant company, Facebook is subject to special obligations under competition law. Should this happen in the U.S.? Nobody wants to weigh in on this one. Matt's mic is cut.
I think we said before that when, because I think it was on one of the episodes where we were talking about what was happening with the GDPR.
Yeah.
And that essentially the irony is that it will be Europe that has more impact on the way American companies behave in America than the U.S. government will. And I think you're starting to see that. I think that obviously if Facebook makes changes like this, has to make changes like this in Germany, it has to look at doing it, you know, across its entire platform.
One of the things that is interesting about this is it's the antitrust regulators that are doing this. Mm-hmm. In the
cartel company.
Right.
I mean, the cartel agency.
Right.
I love that.
in the past, data and privacy really weren't part of that consideration, trust consideration, but essentially the German regulator is saying, look, you know, you're so dominant in Germany that people are almost required to use you, and you're using your dominant position to invade their privacy in ways we don't think is okay. This is the first instance where regulators are saying that because a company has such market power, consent is not freely given. That's mm-hmm. the point. Mm-hmm. And, you know, similar arguments, I'm sure, will appear against Google as well. 74% of American Facebook users surveyed by Pew last month did not know that Facebook maintained profiles about their interests. This is what you were talking about, Gina, the dashboard, right? 51% said once they were shown what Facebook was collecting, I'm not comfortable with that. So people don't know about it. In the U.S., and the regulator's saying even less so in Germany, and they don't have a choice.
And when they say non-Facebook data, they mean data in other Facebook apps like Instagram and WhatsApp. But they're also talking about, like, you go to a website that has the Facebook bug installed on it, but you don't know that, but Facebook knows that you visited that site.
Right.
I think that is something that, like, a normal consumer is unaware of.
This was what Congress, remember, Congress asked Mark Zuckerberg about, what do they call these ghost dossiers, shadow accounts.
Yes.
As you're followed around the internet. Mm-hmm. And Zuckerberg said, we don't do that. Hoping nobody would follow up. Well, what are you talking about? Of course they do. We know they do that. In fact, if you download your Facebook data, I would imagine you'll see some of that.
Well, and it's interesting that there wasn't as much ability to do follow-up in that hearing because
you
need
set
more
up that way,
technological
it?
Expertise. In,
and they were only
given
5 minutes.
Right.
You know?
But being able to ask good questions and have people who understand how computers work, is part of the process, I think.
Well, that's a long and sad story about the, what was it called? We had this great group of people that were advisors, technology advisors to Congress.
Right, that got shut down.
That got shut down some years ago.
Yeah, 94.
Yeah.
In the 90s.
Although I imagine congressional staffers are sophisticated these days, fairly sophisticated. They're younger,
of
they're
course.
Smart.
Absolutely.
So the staffers probably knew, but the whole thing was set up in that case not to have follow-up questions. So.
There are organizations. So there's one called Tech Congress, for example, that tries to get technologists and bring them into Congress to advise people so that they can ask better questions and understand technology and its impacts more. So it's nice to see those green sprouts happening at least.
So I know you will, Gina, know, we'll be able to imagine Jeff's reaction to this German regulation.
I really miss Jeff's reaction to the Germans in general.
He's going to turn bright red. I can't wait till Wednesday. it's an interesting problem. In fact, there was a great article in a Medium by Ben Longstaff. What happens when Google says, we're not going to pay the fines? 50 million euro fine against Google in GDPR a couple of weeks ago. The French competition agency imposed a fine on Google saying they were not transparent. Similar problem, right? They weren't transparent in gathering information. They didn't give people clear enough opt-outs on privacy. So Ben says, okay, well, Google could easily pay that. But what if that fine were actually the full GDPR fine, which is 4% of global revenue? That would be $4.4 billion for Google. At what point does Google say, oh, no, we're not going to pay you? And what would France do? Would France then imagine if the French government said, well, all right, Google can't operate in France, what would be the reaction of French citizens? Here he imagines a banner on Google Pages that people who come to google.fr would see. Your government has breached our terms of service. Until you replace them, we're unable to provide your country with service.
Yikes.
Want your Gmail? Sorry. Need files from your Google Drive? Nope.
This is my favorite.
Lost, in need of directions from Google Maps. I hear you can use the sun for that.
That's such a good line.
I hear. I mean, Google has a pretty strong response. Maybe they would be reluctant to use that because, of course, it would look pretty bad to do so.
Well, and at first glance, this seems, completely unrealistic. But, there was at least Google News in, I think it was Spain.
They did this in Spain.
Where they were like, we can't operate in the country anymore because of the law you just passed, and so we're done. And the impact that it had on a lot of small, news websites, it tended to like push the traffic back toward the established publishers. And so it's it's interesting to see how you could write a short story about what would happen if you got something in the end user license agreement that said, by the way, if you don't pay your licenses, then the company will take over your judiciary or something like that.
And this brings us right back, though, full circle to the conversation at the beginning of the show. I mean, we're really dependent on these companies. If they said, no Google Maps for you, that would be problematic, to say the least. My car has Google Maps, right? I wouldn't know how to drive. I forgot how to do that. Well, I don't think that Google would even consider that, but because I think they understand they're citizens of the world. They don't want the black mark and so forth. But you're right. They did. And if the fine, I guess the question was, okay, they're not 50 million euros, big deal. That's pocket change. But what if it were? What if they did eventually say, we want $4.5 billion? What would Google do? Wow. Here's an example of corporate blackmail, actually. And I'm not talking the Examiner here. The
Inquirer.
By the way, the Inquirer.
Inquirer.
I did not want, and I'm going to just say this right now, in case you're tuned in to find out what our esteemed panel thinks about Jeff Bezos and the National Enquirer. I decided this is not a tech story. This is a gossip story. This is a politics story. But I don't think there's a tech angle. So I've just decided not to put that on a rundown. Okay? Everybody's talking about it. I know.
Well, actually.
I'm going to start sending you some hearts.
Yes, hearts. Thank you. She's sending hearts on Skype. That turns her blue. We don't know why.
The tech question is, how did they get the texts and the pictures?
I think that's even so.
That's the tech question.
Yeah, yeah.
That's the tech question.
Yeah. I'll let you talk about that in Tech Burger. Save that for Tech Burger. However, Amazon is not above blackmail of its own. Read this one. This is in the Washington Post. The story was leaked to the Washington Post. Facing opposition, Amazon reconsiders New York headquarters site, two officials say. Okay, I'm going to bet those two officials are Amazon officials who perhaps might have just called the Washington Post and say, you know what? if they don't wise up there in New York City, we could just pull out.
Remember, Amazon's not tough enough for the Big Apple. They're not tough enough. Come on. Grow a little bit of a thick skin. Give me a break. You want everyone to hug you and kiss you when you arrive? Just
they have no idea. This is a Brooklyn hug. What are you talking about? What are you talking about? So the issue is that there has been some criticism from advocacy groups and elected officials because Amazon will, no matter where it goes, get big tax breaks. Mm-hmm. But it will also bring 25,000 jobs to the new campus, which is on Long Island, right? It's Queens, right?
Long Island City, yes.
Long Island City, yeah. Mm-hmm. And but, you know, maybe some people in Long Island City aren't too happy about just the big Amazon moving in. Remember what happened to housing prices in Seattle.
Mm. Yes.
You know, there's that issue of tax breaks. I think, you know, the governor and the mayor think it's a good thing because they're going to generate jobs, so they'll get the money back. Nevertheless, Amazon, and again, maybe they're not really considering pulling out, but remember they did a big hunt. They went, you know, big deal. They went to a lot of cities, said, what would you give us if we relocated? The idea that okay, fine. You don't want us? See ya. That's blackmail. That's blackmail.
Or is it just responding to incentives? I'm going to say if Amazon decides to put more technology people in D.C. as a result, I'm not going to object to that.
Yeah, by the way, that was one of the places it could have been. In fact, isn't it Northern Virginia? There's going to be a satellite there. Yeah,
right. There's two of them. Yeah. Two HQ2s.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I thought that was funny, especially this week for obvious reasons.
Yeah.
Which we won't go into. Let's see. Amazon has started a QVC. Have you anybody watched Amazon Live? Live streamed video. It's very much like QVC. It features live stream video shows from Amazon highlighting current deals at Amazon.com. Also, brands can broadcast their own live streams. Amazon bought Twitch. I wonder if this is the Twitch back end. There's a new app called Amazon Live Creator. This is the future of home shopping, right?
So this is user-generated content, so users are doing this?
It can be both. It can be both. So let's see. Right now on Amazon Live, True Grid Permeable Pavers, really a great deal.
what?
Oh, no. This is an old one. So this is user-generated. Here's the guy from True Grid. Should I turn the sound on? You want to?
Strongest permeable pavers. It drains. It's 100% pervious, so the water goes right through, and you can store water in the base. We're here today.
Yeah, this is basically Twitch for infomercials, right?
Oh, wow. Okay. I didn't even know I needed this.
You do. You definitely. If you've got a driveway, you need True Grid permeable pavers. Here's some other things. Foot Nanny Peppermint Yummy. I don't want to know what that is.
Might not be work safe.
I'm not clicking on it. How about the Pono board? some sort of weird exercise. So apparently, even though Amazon has its own stuff, there's quite a bit of third-party parenting game changer, Gina. The the Cinemood Portable Theater.
I'm Emily, and thank you so much for joining us today live on Amazon. We're super excited to have you.
So this is kind of interesting, right? I mean, this is obviously a small company. Maybe even she's doing this in her second bedroom, and Amazon's giving her a chance to promote it.
Yeah, it looks like a lot of these are the companies themselves promoting their own products. But I'm interested in, like, could you imagine someone, you know, launch a new indie like Wirecutter, but do it all, you know, in video?
This is the official Amazon video. Oh, that's a good idea. Maybe Twitch should do that. We could do it on this platform.
Yeah.
Whatever you do, don't buy the whatever that was.
Foot Nanny Peppermint Yummies.
They're addictive.
I presume you get affiliate fees if you sell stuff, right?
Yeah, it's got to be.
Right. Well, what's interesting is how on many platforms, Amazon approaches traditional retailing. So if you think of QVC as being traditional cable retailing, here they are. They're going into brick and mortar stores. There they are. As they get bigger, they kind of move away from the internet and go more into traditional retailing, which, you know, people are used to seeing. In this case, they've added the twist of being able to do your own. And I assume some of those hosts act like almost like VJs, where they will, if they find something they like, they'll pull it up and promote it. And that's what you want to do. You want to get featured.
Wait a minute. Where's the posture pump? I want to do that.
Number one, the internet is weird.
Is that on here? Posture pump live. Yeah. Okay. Oh, that's coming up later today.
So I just have to say, you know how there's all those infomercials on YouTube where people are like starting to take a drink of a cup and then whoa, and it all falls over.
Yeah.
Like,
this is going to be more of that.
This is
going to
be
even
this
better.
In spades.
Oh, here's the posture pump
potential. And finally, you'll also receive a patient flyer.
I want to see the guy. He's wearing the posture pump. He's pumping up his posture pump. I don't know. I think I'm getting one of those for Dwight. You need that, Dwight.
I am kind of slumped here, aren't I?
I think this would be really... I like what you're thinking, Gina. I wonder if they would allow us to put our reviews there.
When you're done... Completely.
Yeah,
completely.
I mean,
release the Velcro straps.
Recommend
from the
something.
And
the posture pump. Could I give a bad review to stuff?
Sure.
Why not?
That's they how you build your credibility.
That's they don't say you can't.
Yeah.
Wow.
I don't know what to do about this.
You mean the posture pump or just the whole thing in general?
Well, you know, you could have a second career. You know,
oh, yeah.
You'd come home and you become a VJ selling posture pumps.
Well, ever since Gimlet got sold to Spotify for $230 million, I have been looking for the big score for Twit. And it might be the posture pump. I'm just saying. Wow. Actually, we'll talk about that in just a bit and what it might mean for podcasting. We've got a great panel. Gina Trapani, it's great to have you back on the show. Managing partner at postlight.com. And long time host on Twig, founder of Lifehacker. Do you still write it all for the web?
You know, I write for Postlight, has a publication and a podcast, actually, called Track Changes, that I write on occasionally at postlight.com. And, but not as much as I used to. I really burned out on blogging every single day because I did
That's
it for that
work.
5 years there That's at Lifehacker. Work. Yeah, it's a lot. It's a lot. But once in a while, I wrote a piece about personal finance apps, actually, recently.
It was good.
Yeah, thank you.
We have somebody in the chat room who still uses todo.txt.
Wow.
Are you keeping that up?
Impressive. I have not. I have ceded it to the community. It is open source.
Nice.
And I had a few community members who were really into the idea of maintaining it. And so, yeah, it's an org on GitHub, and I transferred it over, and I'm grateful that others are keeping it up.
Dwight Silverman, does the Chronicles Tech Burger have a podcast?
No, but we're growing a number of podcasts. I'm in our podcast studio, surrounded by microphones and soundproofing, and so we don't have one yet for tech. But
I got a suggestion: if you wanted to do a Tech Burger podcast, you could name it Between the Buns. I'm just saying, I would listen.
I think that's sold.
I'm giving it to you.
All right. Thank you.
HoustonChronicle.com/TechBurger. And where can we find the podcast? Are they just all over? Or?
I think you go to HoustonChronicle.com/podcast. The most interesting one that we started is one of our reporters who covers criminal justice. Her name is Carrie Blakinger. She actually did time in prison on a drug charge, and she writes from some serious authenticity. And she's doing a podcast about being in prison. And it's wow. it's really interesting and worth listening to.
Wow. And from the United States Digital Service Administrator, Matthew Cutts. Mm. Do you get a title like General Cutts? You should.
So whenever I was at the U.S. Digital Service at the Pentagon, I had the level of 06, which is roughly equivalent to a colonel.
Colonel Cutts.
So at some point you were joking on Twig about Colonel Cutts, and I was like, I was jogging listening to it, and
I am Colonel Cutts.
I kind of am. So
was Colonel Cutts in the dining room with the lead
with
pipe.
The candlestick. Yeah,
the candlestick. Colonel Cutts. I like it.
You know.
Colonel Cutts is
Well, you know, if
badass.
You become the Surgeon General, you get to be called General Attorney General, get to be called General Postmaster General, get to be called General.
Mm-hmm.
I think you deserve at least a colonel.
I am very happy to be an administrator. You know, in D.C., if you're a secretary, that is, you know, administrator.
It sounds like something out of Catch-22, Major Cutts. It does, doesn't it? Our show today brought to you by, anyway, great to have all three of you. We love it when you come back on the show, and it's like old home week. It really feels good. Our show today brought to you by FreshBooks. If you're a freelancer, you know that making invoices is the worst part of the job, unless that's your business. Like, we're in the invoice business, but most of us, like for me, when I was going up to Canada to do the TV show at Rogers, at the end of the month, I'd have to put all my expenses together, send them an expense report, and invoice them for the amount of money plus my time. And I would just put it off, which turns out that when you don't invoice, you don't get paid. And it got to one point, I was 6 months behind. I finally gave them the invoice for 6 months. They said, never do that again, or you will not get paid. You will not get paid. That's when Amber MacArthur told me about FreshBooks, a brand new startup in Toronto. And now, here we are, what, 15 years later, FreshBooks is just the king of the hill. The all-in-one accounting solution helping small business owners thrive. Yeah, I said the bad word, accounting, but honestly, it is. It's full industry standard accounting, but you don't have to be an accountant. All you have to do is use FreshBooks to create your invoices, keep track of your expenses, and bingo, right there on the FreshBooks page, you'll immediately know, because you're keeping track of expenses and income, you'll know whether you're making a profit. You could easily generate accounting reports like general ledger, and balance sheet in the dashboard. When tax time comes, you'll give your accountant all the stuff they want. And, of course, you'll send professional-looking invoices in seconds. You can always see which invoices have been sent, which have been paid, which are overdue, and even which have been viewed. So no more,
I didn't get your invoice.
They got it. They saw it. And what's nice is it turns out your clients are not slow to pay because they don't want to pay you. Most of the time, they're slow to pay you for the same reason you're slow to invoice. It's just a pain to get together all the bills at the end of the month and pay them. It's so easy with FreshBooks because as a FreshBooks customer, you get automatic online payments. So they could just press a button on your invoices. Go ahead, pay Leo. That means you get paid on average twice as fast. They're always adding new features too. It's a web application, so you're always getting new things like the proposals with rich text content and images. You can now get e-signatures from your client, you know, that are legally binding. It's easy to update expenses. Of course, the FreshBooks app takes pictures of the receipts and puts them right in the invoice. But you can even have FreshBooks log into your bank daily and download all your expenses. FreshBooks works with everything you use already: Acuity, scheduling, PieSync, MailChimp, and more. Keep tabs on your business anytime, anywhere with the FreshBooks mobile app. You are going to love FreshBooks and a great support team right out of Canada, so they're nice. 8 a.m. to 8 p.m. Eastern in a video hub where you can learn how to use it and get more information 24/7. Avoid the tax time scramble next year. It's too late for this year, but now's the time to get started with FreshBooks. Upgrade to FreshBooks for effortless invoicing and just kind of in the process of life itself, all the accounting you need. Try it free for 30 days at FreshBooks.com/twit. And if you do me a favor, put This Week in Tech in that form that says, how did you hear about us? We'd appreciate it. FreshBooks.com FreshBooks.com/Twit. I've known these guys for years, and I think the world of them. FreshBooks.com/Twit. So, yeah, it was a bit of a shock to the podcasting community when it was announced this week that Spotify was going to buy two big podcasting entities, one Gimlet, which is a producer of podcasts, for a whopping $230 million. Gimlet had raised about $40 million on the, or maybe even a little less in the venture markets. So this is a big payback for their investors and for the Gimlet founders. And also a tool maybe less known, but one I've used and I really like, called Anchor, which is basically a podcast platform. It's like WordPress for podcasts. Makes it very easy to use your smartphone to make really good-sounding podcasts. I've made quite a few using it. I think it's a great way to do that. It's interesting. In fact, Ben Thompson has a very good article on Stratechery about the strategy behind this, and I think I completely agree with him. The problem that Spotify faced is the same problem Netflix faced a few years ago when the movie industry said, well, you guys are too successful. We're not going to let you have first-run movies. Mm. Netflix's response was, well, fine, we'll make our own, and it's gone very well for them. Spotify has a similar problem. Their profits are totally dependent on the music industry. At any point, the music industry could put them out of business by charging more on royalties. So they need their own content as well. And what better content, audio content, than podcasts? So it makes sense. In fact, a lot of podcasters, we're on Spotify. In fact, when Spotify announced that they were going to do podcasts, we were up there on stage with Daniel Ek, and one of the first. But their discovery platform is not super strong. It's hard to figure out what's on there. Mm-hmm. I think there's a lot more they can do. Ben's article actually opened my eyes to one thing that I didn't realize, which is that Spotify is a big advertising company. In fact, they have more advertising revenue than the entire podcast industry put together. So there is definitely an opportunity here for they drove $616 million in advertising revenue last year.
Wow.
So there's definitely an opportunity for Spotify to maybe become an advertising platform for podcasters looking to monetize. That would kind of make sense. A couple of big questions, though. A, does Spotify want exclusivity? Because I would think they would, because their revenue streams are twofold. One is, of course, advertising, but the other more important revenue stream for Spotify is subscribers. Mm-hmm. And exclusives drive subscriptions. They don't get exclusives on music, but they certainly do have exclusives now. In fact, on some Gimlet podcasts, if you want to listen to Crime Town, you can't listen to it on the open web. You can't listen to it on your Amazon Echo. You have to listen to it on Spotify. So I'm a little concerned about that as a podcaster. I hate to see podcasts become, hide behind paywalls. Yeah. What do you think? What does this mean? It's certainly a sea change. And maybe this is too inside baseball because, after all, as a podcast, we care about this probably more than the average world. What do you think, Matt?
Oh, I see Dwight is...
Dwight, are you trying to speak? Or are you frozen?
I'm muted. I'm sorry.
Oh, okay.
I was muted. I apologize.
Good. We'll let you go then.
I was just going to say that people who listen to this podcast listen to other podcasts and are interested in the medium, I think.
Okay.
So I'm not sure it's necessarily inside.
Yeah. I mean, I certainly care a lot about it.
I enjoy Reply All. It's a great podcast.
That's a Gimlet podcast.
Yeah.
It's a very well-done tech
podcast.
Yeah,
that's a good show.
Yeah.
I've visited Gimlet. Like, on one hand, it's interesting that they're... Are they a technology company or are they a media company? And, you know, mm-hmm. with the big companies like the Facebooks and the Googles of the world, they always claim to be technology companies. So it's interesting to say, where did Gimlet fit in that
space?
Gimlet's
a media company. It's pretty sure. It's like buying HBO or something like that. You're buying, and I think this is what Spotify was interested in, a company that could create new podcasts. Mm-hmm. I would say exclusive, although Spotify denies this, for the Spotify platform. Mm-hmm. Then with Anchor, they can attract other podcasters. Mm-hmm. They could say, we'll help sell advertising with our engine, mm-hmm. and we'll give you access to 200 million users. I think other podcasts, and use our tool, Anchor, to do it, other podcasts, they might be able to generate quite a bit of content that way.
What do you think about the fact that, like, Spotify is doing this now, a few years after podcasts, I mean, Serial and all that sort of stuff? Like, it's interesting, Apple has done their play, you know, various other tech companies have done their play.
I think we haven't seen the end of it. Daniel Ek himself says we've got $500 million we want to spend on acquisitions. Mm. So there may be more acquisitions. Mm-hmm. Pandora, which has been struggling, just as Spotify has with the record industry, is also trying to figure out what to do. They've gone into podcasting big. Mm-hmm. I don't think Apple needs to because they have another revenue stream, I hear. But Apple's, you know, if Apple had decided to do this way back when, they could have.
Yeah.
I think Apple wisely said, we don't want to become a sole source for podcasts. Mm-hmm. We like to support podcasts with iTunes, and they do, but we don't want to be a gatekeeper. Spotify, I don't think, minds. Yeah. In fact, Spotify has changed their terms of service at the same time as they announced this to explicitly ban ad blockers. You'll actually be kicked off the Spotify service if you try to block ads. Mm. Now, that's for free users. Remember, there's no ads for paid users, at least for now. Mm. But that's kind of interesting.
They're looking at the Netflix and Hulu model of original content being big drivers of subscribers and being this, you know, thing that you sign up for, right? So you hear like, oh, this, I don't know, name's a good Netflix original show. I don't know, Orange is the New Black. That's, I guess that's old, but people are talking about it and they're like, all right, I want to sign up for Spotify to hear that podcast. I don't know if I really like Gimlet's shows. I don't know if they have the the power to do that. I certainly hope that Spotify doesn't make all their shows exclusive. I'm really interested in just podcasting as a medium getting better. Mm-hmm. I feel like it's been kind of stagnant. Like there's still no good ways to get like transcripts or stats or like real numbers about it. Doesn't feel like the way that podcasts are distributed and the way that people can consume them have gotten better beyond the occasional like good client or you know, or service. I don't know, I'd be interested to hear from you, Leo. Like, you've been at this for years and years and years, like, and you have built out this whole infrastructure at Twit to do live streaming, you know, video and distribute the audio across all the different mediums. Like, what would you like to see to make just podcasting in general as a medium, not specific to a particular company or product, like, be better? What could be better about it?
I like the idea. Anchor is really cool. So I think that making it easy for people to make podcasts and maybe even make some money on podcasts because of Spotify's advertising engine, I have no problem with that. I think that's great. But we've seen before in the past others try to kind of take over podcasting by creating a giant podcast network. Remember Mevio? Mm-hmm. And they had very restrictive contracts that made it very hard for podcasters to go elsewhere. I don't like the idea of podcasters getting locked in to any platform, because I think really the strength of podcasting is very much like the strength of the internet, like blogging, mm-hmm. which is that it's democratizing, that it's easy to make one. It's almost as easy to make a podcast as it is a blog. There's this issue of discovery, but you know, I don't want to see Spotify become the next YouTube. Mm-hmm. And at this point, if you create video content, you've got to be on YouTube. Google owns it, basically. That's where you go. Others have tried. Facebook's tried. Mm-hmm. And Facebook Watch isn't a big success. I think a lot of people listening probably didn't even know that exists. So Vimeo's profitable, but it's not really a competitor to YouTube. YouTube owns that space. I'd hate to see Spotify become the place to get audio content, because I do think podcasting is great. It's very vital in the sense that it's very active and growing, and it's exciting. You hear new things. The other thing that worries me a little bit, Gimlet has a very distinct style. Gimlet, yes. Like a number of other startups, was created by NPR refugees, and it has a very NPR sound to it, which we don't. By the way, we don't do. We don't do our shows like that. Our shows more sound like radio, yeah. Like talk shows, because I have a radio background. Hmm. They are all storytelling. They always begin with a little music. Alex was walking down the street when something unusual happened. There's a style.
There's a definite style. A distinctive style,
which people love. I'm not saying that. They love it. But I would hate to see podcasts all sound the same.
Hmm.
So,
definitely.
And, you know, so I think it's I think a monoculture is bad for anything.
So it sounds like they're trying to thread the needle where Spotify wants to be beloved. They want to take the Netflix model and, like, get a whole bunch of new voices and cherish those voices and make them more popular and more easy. But if you can avoid the, well, I guess down the road, they have to worry if they're so successful that, you become the only place where podcasts.
That's the risk that they could become like YouTube. The reason people go to YouTube because it's free, right? Mm-hmm. I can put my stuff there. They'll sell ads. I might even make some money. Some people make a lot of money. Mm-hmm. That's exactly, in my opinion, what Spotify is going to position itself as is the YouTube of podcasting. Yeah. And that has, I think, that's a bad thing if they become too powerful.
Mm-hmm. So Spotify has two offers. You know, they have a free version and they have the paid version. So let's take Crimetown, for example, which as I understand it, eventually after it's had its run, they'll kind of set it free on the open podcast market. But if you want to listen to Crimetown as a podcast when it is released and you're a free user, will you hear ads, whereas if you are a paid subscriber, will you not hear ads? Is that how it'll work?
Well, it's not clear, but that would be my guess. That's how they do music right now. If you listen to Spotify's music without paying for it, you get ads, right? In fact, a lot of them, $616 million last year. Mm-hmm. That's a lot of money.
So here's
twice what they estimate the podcast industry made.
So if you like, say, Reply All, but you hate listening to ads, are you willing to pay Spotify account in order to listen to it without ads?
I'm sure that's their plan, right?
So how do you transition? It's interesting. A lot of people love Patreon, and I think they only take a 5% cut or some small cut. And so
that's, by the way, is really jump-started podcasting.
Yeah.
A lot of podcasters do.
Right. So how do you, you know, where along the spectrum of the cut do you become the bad guy?
Right.
Do you become what you think of as YouTube or whatever?
Well, you don't even know what YouTube takes. They won't say, and nobody's saying, but I think it's a fairly...
It's more than 5%.
More than 5%.
They're not significantly the Patreon model.
Yeah, I would say it's more than half, probably. Mm-hmm. That's a very interesting question. I don't, you know, I think in the long run, anything that does, helps podcasters create podcasts, monetize it, and distribute it and be discovered is good. In that case, this is a good thing. I'd hate for it to become a monoculture. That would be a bad thing. And if every podcast started to sound like a Gimlet podcast, I'd be very unhappy.
That's totally fair. I think for people new to podcasts, like a Gimlet style might be a good sort of entry point, but I don't know. But I totally agree with you, Leo.
Yeah.
I mean, this is ironic because we just talked about how we wanted to live without these big companies, but I've always wished and hoped that Google would take on making podcasts better, more discoverable, easier to search. I feel like there's so much fertile ground there to make podcasts just more mainstream, even, you know, than they've become much more mainstream, but even more so.
Matt, could Google do something? I mean, the problem with podcasts is their audio.
Mm-hmm.
And so you don't have a text to index to Spider. Could Google do that?
Absolutely, they could do
that.
So, like, there's something in the rundown about Transcribe, which doesn't just transcribe, but tries to do punctuation and capitalization.
This is a really cool product from Google.
Yeah.
Lets you do real-time transcription.
Right.
If you don't, if you're deaf or perhaps you don't speak a language, you could put the phone down and it would tell you what's... That's awesome.
And apparently it can get, I got a New Jersey in New Jersey and get the capitalization right. Like, I have been waiting for the point where I can, just dictate my emails instead of typing them for a long time.
We're pretty close.
And so if they can do that, and if they could get the discovery part. And by the way, maybe the podcast model where you're like, I have to listen to every single episode of, you know, pick your favorite podcast. Maybe that's broken. Maybe it's just show me the one podcast that's super relevant to me because Gina's on it, you know, or something. That episode is the one that I want, and I don't have to listen to every single one.
So this is a
singles versus albums.
Yeah, this is a website called Inverse, Inverse, where they used Google's transcription against a rap song by Twista. Let's see how well it does. It's doing so much better than I am. Twist is fast. He's got the flow.
Mm-hmm.
I'll be honest with you, I don't know if it's accurate or not.
We need better data.
but it's fast. It's keeping up with him, and it looks pretty credible. I mean, it saw Jimmy Choo, which I would not have known. Mm-hmm. That's what he was saying. He says, I'm going to get you Jimmy Choo and I'll get the bags. Mm-hmm. It got it right. Mm-hmm. That's pretty impressive.
Yeah, At Postlay, we have a podcast called Track Changes, and we pay a production company who's great to do all of our transcripts. But yeah, it's an investment. It's a bigger investment than an individual could make. To make all of our transcripts searchable and add in all the links and the show notes and all that stuff, like, that's a lot of work. You know that, Leo.
Yeah. And it's very expensive to get it done right. On the other hand, it wouldn't have to be done that well for it to be usable as an indexing
That's
service.
That's right. It's so close. It's so close to where it could transcribe well, discovery could work well, you could bookmark specific audio, you could be like, just show me the relevant part of this 2-hour episode. I mean, that would be really interesting.
Yeah.
It also is excellent for reporting. If you're a reporter and you're out in the field and you are making a recording as well as using this, it would cut down the time it would take to do your transcription dramatically.
That is probably the single biggest problem. I think most people who start podcasts right now aren't trying to make a living. Maybe you don't even expect to make any money, but they would like listeners. And discovery is impossible. I mean, if you're not a big name or on a big name network, or you can't get... Honestly, the number one most important thing for any podcaster to do is to convince Apple to feature you on either New or Noteworthy or on the weekly thing. Mm-hmm. That is huge. That can put a podcast on the map. Mm-hmm. But how do you do that if you're just some guy from Brooklyn?
Yeah.
I don't know why I'm picking on Brooklyn, but if you're just some guy from Brooklyn, I don't know how you do that. And that's the biggest problem. So right now the big issue if you're starting a podcast is, how will I get anybody to listen to me? I mean, it's the same problem with bloggers or anything else.
Yeah.
If you're a YouTuber, you have that same problem. Yep. There's no magic there either. But I think search would help. I don't know. What do we do? How do we solve this, Matt?
Could I make it just a little more dystopian?
Yes.
Okay. So what is a podcast? It is, you know, maybe it's produced, but it's a segment of audio. I could imagine a world in which people could be convinced to just take their phone and have it be always recording what they're saying and have it be completely personalized for your search. So I was on a phone call on the drive up here, and I could just be like, you know what? Show me, you know, the meeting that I was in and go to the highlight. And you could be like, oh, yes, it turns out this person did steal this person's idea. Or, oh, there were microaggressions. Or, I did interrupt this person. And you could score based on how much how much of a good actor you are. Like, there's a whole world in which Google or whoever had that technology could be like, you're being a jerk.
I'm registering microaggressions.fm right now as we speak.
I love that you went straight to microaggressions and idea stealing. That's amazing.
You know,
but sentiment analysis we can do. We can do a lot of that.
You can
stuff.
Do sentiment analysis. You could say, I need to remember to blank, and it could automatically export that and put it into todo.txt. Like,
why? This is the flip side of the privacy issue we were talking about earlier. I can almost guarantee you that you've been in the meetings, I'm sure, where that's been pitched and people said, no, that's a private, we will run up against a privacy buzzsaw here. It crosses the creepy line, even though it's a great thing people would love. We've got to be careful here. Don't you think that happens?
You know, if somebody opted into it and it was localized or encrypted,
I have no problem with it. Yes.
You know, like, if it were only for you and not for anybody else.
But you know what everybody would say, Google just wants to listen to our calls.
Well, you could have a checkbox that says, you know, in aggregate, can I send the information? Right. Because then you would really be able to transcribe stuff well. So
I love the idea. I don't care if it crosses a creepy line. I want it. That's brilliant, Matt.
Tell Google Home to turn it on.
Yeah.
And so I'm looking at Anchor.fm, which is the other company. We don't know how much Spotify paid for them, but this is easily the simplest way to make a podcast. They have apps for iOS and Android. You record on your phone. You can easily put music behind it. You can incorporate calls. I've been doing that. I have a little podcast because I wanted to play with it called Leo on the Line at Lottl Fun, LOTLFUN. .fun, and it's very easy to make these podcasts, and I've done it all on my phone, and you can incorporate other people's questions into your shows, which I've been doing, which is a lot of fun. I have a podcast network. I don't really need this, but I could see people going crazy about this. What if you added this feature to an Amazon Echo or a Google Home?
Mm-hmm.
You know, record my show.
Right.
You could easily do that. So there is a... That's why I worry a Spotify acquisition could take the air out of this kind of innovation. Yeah. You don't want one company to be so dominant. Mm-hmm. So that's why I think it's great. I'm glad Spotify put the money into this. And now I don't want, when Apple came out with podcasting and iTunes, I think I blogged, this is both the worst thing that could happen to podcasting and the best thing. Mm-hmm. And that's always the risk when these big players come in. Apple's turned out to be a pretty good steward of podcasting, mm-hmm. although they wield huge influence. Mm-hmm. Google could do the same thing. In fact, I was very disappointed. Google has a podcast tool,
yeah.
but they haven't put a lot of energy into it. Yeah. I'd like to see them put more energy into it. Somebody says it's micro aggregations. I see more micro aggregators. I like the idea. Let's take a little break. Come back with more. Gina Trapani. She's a here from postlight.com. So nice to have you. Mr. Dwight Silverman, who, now tell me, remind me, because you were on with us January 2010. When Steve Jobs announced the iPad, remind me, did you love it or hate it?
The iPad at the time?
Yeah, I think you loved it.
I did love it. I thought it had great potential. It was clearly a 1.0, and I think a lot of people realize that. And I still use mine every day. I know a lot of people kind
me too.
Of fall out of love with it. But,
yeah, that
but
Pro
it's,
is amazing.
I think it's an excellent product.
Yeah. See, there you go. That's how long Dwight's been pontificating on our network. Matt Cutts is also here. He is a big shot. He is Colonel Cutts of the United States Digital Service. I probably shouldn't do that to you. You're going to go home and you're going to get a lot of...
I'll get in trouble, but that's fine.
Trouble. At Matt Cutts on the Twitter. You still use the Twitter?
Absolutely.
Do you miss the Google Plus?
I just use Google Takeout to export my Google Plus I can save it off.
There's a perfect example of... something great that Google did. I thought great. Mm. Should have been the premier social network because it had threaded conversations. Yeah. It had, as Mike Elgin has said many times, the tools you needed to moderate mm-hmm. and block bad content. It had such potential. I don't know what went wrong, and it makes me sad.
Well, and they put so many cycles into that. And if they had put those cycles into, you know, pick your, you know, enterprise
Google
or
Wave.
Something like that.
Oh, that was mean.
Man. That twisted the knife right there.
That's mean. That's so mean. Just for those who don't know, Gina wrote a book about Google Wave. The only probably book ever written about Google Wave.
It's like the punchline of my career, although it's been long enough now that young folks are like, what? Like, I'm starting to not work as much.
No one even knows what Google Wave is anymore.
It's true.
By the way, like you can 09? Still get it $25 on Amazon if you'd like to get a copy.
Oh, Leo, you're killing me right now. You are killing me. That is amazing.
We all have those.
I want to get you to autograph my copy. Yeah, we all have. Dwight's exactly right. We all have those.
I appreciate that. Yeah. Thank you.
Oh, it's out of stock. out of stock. Yeah. Well, at least I can get the Kindle edition still.
Oh, man.
Is Wave in any way alive? Is there any, like,
yes!
It's, yeah.
Like, so, like, Wave proper, I think Apache, it turned into an open source project and Apache took it over. But the way that Wave is still alive is in Google Docs. Like, mm-hmm. Google Docs has live typing and comments and, like, those things that kind of, like, blew my mind in 2009 when it got demoed at Google I.O. Like, that stuff all kind of lived on in other Google products that we all sort of use every day. Mm-hmm. But it's just not called Wave.
And the I'm sad to say that the... Git repository is gone, but there is an Apache incubator website, so they do have something going on.
I think they may have. I may be remembering wrong, but I think at some point Apache may have put it into.
Yeah, the last news post was 2013.
Yeah, I feel like it was. They put it in zombie mode.
Zombie mode. That's too bad because it was a really interesting collaborative platform. I really like. Obviously, you thought it was. You wrote a book about it.
For the time, it was incredible time.
But
it
you're right. We have a lot of those features now in Google Docs.
We do.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Our show today brought to you by, developers, you know this name, Atlassian. If you are a developer and you're not using Atlassian's Jira tool, man, I don't know how you survive. Jira keeps track of your issues, keeps track of your development, who's doing what, when, completions. It's the most satisfying thing in the world when you can move that Jira column over to completed. And I love that. We've used Jira for years. Actually, we're in an Atlassian house because it just starts with Jira. But Atlassian has a bunch of tools. And it's really about collaboration. Tools that empower IT teams around the world and the people who work with those IT teams. This is a you know, a tough world with complicated software out there, complicated relationships. One of the reasons we love Atlassian is because Jira helps us keep track of who's doing what, and then it naturally flows into Confluence. It's so important for us that we have documentation of our processes. And then Bitbucket, if you have a code database, is a great way to keep track of your code. But there's a whole lot more. There's now Ops Genie, Status Page. They acquired Trello, another great project manager. Look, it's not just for developers. Atlassian offers an affordable, reliable suite of tools for teams of all sizes, from DevOps to Agile, IT apps to Ops to ITSM, and whatever's next. Jira, Confluence, Bitbucket, Ops Genie, Status Page. Here's what you do. Go right now to Atlassian.com and find the tool for your IT team. It's easy, it's free to try, and they will scale to whatever you need them to do. So many big companies and small use Atlassian software. It will grow with you. Like of all of Atlassian's products, the tools for your team are easy and free to try at Atlassian.com/IT. Atlassian.com/IT. We're proud to be an Atlassian house. I say it all the time. We use it and we recommend it. Atlassian.com/IT. Well, this has been so much fun. Let me find some more grist for the mill. Apple is going to pay back taxes to French authorities. In fact, if you looked at the Alphabet results and their tax bill, their tax rate was 139% last year, but it was 11% this quarter. And that's because of repatriation, right? Mm-hmm. Getting that money back. But Apple apparently had a vast amount of backdated tax. French media estimated it to be $571 million. Mm. Apple confirmed they have paid the taxes back. They didn't say exactly how much. Mm. You know, it's a lot of money for you and me. Not that much for Apple. Not that much for Apple. So I don't know exactly what to say about these multinational companies and their tax. I wish I could do it, I guess. But on the other hand, as an individual who pays almost, I don't know what it is, 40% compared to Google's 11%, I'm actually glad to pay taxes because I don't, you know, this country made it possible for us to do what we do. Mm-hmm. We use the roads, we use all the services of the U.S. government, the U.S. Digital Service, our armed forces. I'm glad to pay taxes, and I think it would be appropriate for these tech companies to pay a little bit more. I understand why they don't have to. So maybe there's something to be done there, if you know what I mean. Angela Ahrens, this was a big surprise. We're in the middle of Mac Break Weekly on Tuesday when news comes that the head of Apple Retail, the CEO they wooed away from Burberry, she was the CEO and became the head of Apple Retail, which looked like a demotion. She's been there 5 years, has announced she's going to leave in a couple of months. I think it was a surprise to Apple because they announced they're replacing her with a longtime Apple executive who was in charge of HR. They call it people at Apple. Mm-hmm. She'll be now senior vice president of retail plus people. Mm. So it's my guess they're searching for a replacement, and this is an interim, although they did not say that. Mm. Didn't say why Ahrens is leaving, but you know, it's one of those where she wants to spend more time with her family, but she's looking for new personal and professional pursuits, according to Tim Cook.
I'd love to know what that kind of story is, yeah. But we never will.
We'll never
well, maybe,
know.
I don't know. We'll see.
We know there is a story. We don't know what the story is.
She did
definitely a story there because retail plus people, it's not a thing.
Right.
That's not a thing.
No, it isn't.
There had been. There had been rumors that she was a possible heir apparent to the CEO position at Apple early on, just because of her experience with Burberry. And she has a real charisma. You know, when she was on stage, she was very compelling, I think. And so maybe there's a little friction there between Tim and Angela.
That is not unusual. We've seen it again and again. I remember Stephen Elop left Microsoft when it was known Microsoft was seeking a new CEO to replace Steve Ballmer. Elop was in the running. Mm-hmm. When he learned he wasn't going to be CEO, he quit.
Yeah.
Actually, it turned out they hired a pretty good guy who's now celebrating his, is it fifth anniversary as CEO of Microsoft, Satya Nadella.
Yeah, he's been doing a great job.
He's done an amazing job. And you could absolutely say Arendts has done an amazing job in retail. Mm-hmm. It does make sense, Dwight, what you say. I mean, she came from a CEO. It would be sensible if they, you know, said, well, look, Angela, come to Apple, help us with retail, do it for 5 years, and then you can be the CEO when Tim retires. How old is Tim Cook? He's getting close to retirement age.
He's in his 60s, isn't he? Yeah. Early 60s.
Yeah, I think so.
Although I have to say that, you know, you say she's done a good job, but if you go into any Apple store, it's so crowded and it's a very chaotic environment. It's no longer kind of the zen and chill that it used to be. And if you try to get a Genius Bar appointment and you try, certainly you can't, it's almost impossible to walk in now, that whole process of getting the personalized support is really kind of a mess. And I'm not sure in necessarily in that arena that she's done that good a job.
She might have been too successful. I mean, the stores are just jammed
with
people buying Apple stuff.
Good problem to have.
Is that true everywhere? I assume that was a New York City thing.
No, everywhere.
It's jammed. Everywhere. No, it's everywhere. Always.
Even if, like in our little Santa Rosa store, there's always... And, you know, I think part of the problem, maybe this is her fault, but part of the problem is it's a great place and you feel like it's a completely okay to browse and look and try, mm-hmm. not to buy, mm-hmm. but just to go in there and hang out, answer some email, you know, mm-hmm. yeah. watch some TV. And I think they wanted to make it like that, but that as a result, every time I go in an Apple store, I can see there are a lot of people just hanging out there.
Yeah.
It's become a place to loiter.
Victims of their own success.
Yeah. Not a bad thing. I think they just need more stores, maybe. They certainly I have made a lot of money on retail.
I speculated on Twitter that there may be some value in breaking off the tech support, the Genius Bar environment from the retail environment. I mean, obviously you're there, you know, it's a chance to sell you something. But I also think that it's become, that system has become so overloaded that it's not even that useful anymore.
Yeah, that's actually an interesting point. They could have a separate little shop for the Genius, put them off to the side somehow. Yeah,
right.
It's interesting. Yeah. Apple has done two things, I think, to protect your privacy. They're limiting accelerometer and gyroscope access in the next version of iOS 12.2 for privacy reasons. This is a new privacy feature in the next version of iOS, which will be coming in the next month or two. Turns out, in the past, motion and orientation information has been available to websites through Safari. It is now off by default, and there is a setting which the user has access to. So that's kind of interesting. Motion and orientation access is a new setting in iOS. I don't know of any exploits, but you can imagine that that might be something bad guys could use. We did see one theoretical exploit where you could figure out what somebody's unlock code was using the accelerometer and the gyroscope. So maybe that's the issue.
Is there any other privacy issue with that? I mean, would there be something not necessarily evil, but
well, Google, you know, Google has demonstrated the ability to detect gate, right? Mm-hmm. And to, you know, one of the issues that websites mm-hmm. have is authentication, right? Passwords mm-hmm. a terrible mm-hmm. method for authentication. And gate analysis, the ability to say, I know you're you because I can tell how you walk, mm-hmm. which uses the accelerometer and gyroscope, I guess could also be used against you as a way to identify you uniquely on the phone.
Mm.
That's wild, mm-hmm. isn't it? Oh, you're Leo. I could tell how you walk.
Just don't sprain your ankle.
Put a pebble in your shoe and you can't log in anymore.
Don't put on shoes that hurt.
Okay, it's just one of many factors.
Yeah, no.
Okay, okay. Combine it. Apple's also told app developers if you're going to record the screen, you have to disclose and get permission. I didn't know this was an issue. But apparently, apps have been using the ability to record, log, or otherwise make a record of user activity without permission. Major companies like Expedia, Hollister, and hotels, according to TechCrunch, were using a third-party analytics tool to record every tap and swipe inside the app. Oh, so it's like it's UI analysis. It's like a heat map, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, probably like for A/B testing.
Right.
I've never seen this ad. This what happens on your iPhone stays in your iPhone. And I love that the irony of this ad is that it's a black shield over all these windows. Can you imagine being one of the apartments?
There's even more irony because it was on a Marriott hotel in Las Vegas.
On a Marriott hotel.
Which had, of course, had just experienced a massive security breach.
There's a lot of layers here. Yeah. A lot of layers.
And by the way, 2 weeks after that ad, Schadenfreude, or maybe it's I'm not sure what the exact German word is. Apple got caught with that FaceTime bug that allowed people to listen to you on your iPhone.
Real bad.
Real
capital
bad.
Capital R, capital B, real bad.
Real bad.
So they fixed that this week.
This is the week they fixed this with the 12.1.4.
There's an interesting aspect of that, though, because they made the mom of the kid report it via, like, iOS beta mechanism.
Yeah, what happened was she tweeted it. Okay. Okay. So that's not exactly a report, but she did try to get it to Apple. At some point, she contacted her local Fox News affiliate because she said, my 14-year-old has found this bug. I think this is a problem. And Apple finally said, well, you've got to do a bug radar report. That's how you have to report. And in order to do that, you have to be a developer. So they were essentially, they didn't say you have to be a developer, but they said, look, you need to report it through radar.
Okay.
And that meant you had to get, you can get a free developer account, but that's a lot of hoops to make somebody jump through. Yeah. Apple apologized. They said, we're going to have a new, we're getting rid of that. We're going to make it easier for the problem. You can imagine, though, you've got how many, what did they say? 800 million, 900 million active iOS users. If 1% of them report something every year, that's thousands of reports a day. Mm-hmm. And most of them are, I can't figure out how to get home. You know, and so
I'm trying to create a new YouTube channel, and I created a brand by accident.
They're inundated with these, so I don't fully blame them. They actually they've said we're going to pay the bug bounty to the kid, the 14-year-old, by contributing to his education. Well, you can't give a 14-year-old $25,000. They just spend it on candy.
I'm glad that they're doing that.
No, not anymore.
By the pump posture and
all. Yeah, they're spending on Amazon TV products.
I think it's a valid question, though, because, like, at least as I recall, to report security problems on Google, you used to use an email address, and it was like security@google.com or something. And the problem is it got massively spammed.
You'd have to have thousands of people going through that all the time.
And they did not.
Right.
And so, like, if you miss something. So, like, what is the right reporting mechanism? Is it a web page, a wizard?
You
like,
know, this is not new. Not only Google and Apple, but Microsoft with 1809, their big fall release, had some really big showstoppers, including one that deleted data. That's as bad as it gets with an operating system update, right? And it turned out that it had been reported by Windows insiders months ago.
Ooh.
And Microsoft just, did they ignore it? Did they miss it? Yeah. I mean, you have this big beta program with Windows insiders. You're trying to get this kind of information. That's presumably a big, big deal. They should, you know, if you were the person who said, oh my God, stop, can't release that. But they didn't.
Yep.
And so I think it's I think this is exactly the problem, is there's just too much data.
Mm-hmm.
You need better systems.
Yeah.
Yeah. Mm. I like these wide, mass bug testing programs. I think they're great. But if you ignore what you learn from it, that's not so useful.
That's totally true.
It's actually worse. Yeah. 12.14 will fix the FaceTime security flaw. Actually fixes a number of other lesser publicized flaws in iOS. We talked about it on Security Now if you want to know more.
The length of time that it took for them to issue the fix, coupled with the fact that everybody knew that this bug existed, is like, that's a deadly combination,
yes.
Right? You ideally either want the bug to come in through a private channel where the whole world doesn't know about it, right? So that people can't exploit it, or you issue the fix almost immediately. Like, it has to be, it really has to be one or the other. But this was just not handled well.
So an open source developer in our chat room named Mandy the Clown says, I think she's a clown, not an open source developer, but I may be wrong. Says, what about, wouldn't open source solve this? But I don't think it would.
Bugs happen, no matter if it's open source or not. I mean, with open source, more people are looking at the code, but there's always going to be bugs and flaws, right? It's how you respond to them, whether you're an open source organization or a giant company like Apple.
Mm-hmm. There's a massive exploit in systemd right now, the system that starts almost all Linux distributions. It's a privilege escalation flaw. That's pretty serious, right? Three of them in systemd, CVE 2018-168, 64, 65, and 66. It's in the journaling service. Pretty much all Linux distros are subject to this. And they're pretty serious. In fact, researchers have created proof of concept exploits, which fortunately have not yet been released. But so this is open source. This is open as you can get. In fact, because systemd is so widely used, I imagine there are lots of people looking at it. Mm-hmm. Doesn't mean there's not flaws. So yeah.
I was about to say, oh, and Heartbleed just happened. That
oh,
was
yeah,
four,
Heartbleed.
4 years ago. I am old.
Heartbleed just happened.
That just happened a couple of weeks ago. Wow.
Man, I haven't used OpenSSL since. Yeah, no, but Heartbleed is really a poster child for this, isn't it? Mm-hmm. In fact, we learned many things from Heartbleed, including how important it is to have a good name for your exploit.
That's
if you
true.
Really want WordPress.
You want a website. Yeah.
You need a website. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And a logo.
An excellent logo.
Yeah. Very nice.
It's funny to me that if you're a company trying to help secure open source stuff like systemd or things like that, is probably a shortcut to goodwill. Like if you have any kind of security thing, like not making your products better or more robust or getting the 14-year-old so they can report a bug is one thing. But if you can make it so that you are helping with internet infrastructure or open source projects, like you're competing for programmers and engineers. Yeah. And like if you can help with those kinds of things, like people see that. And I think that would help with their reputation.
Yeah. You know those folks. Programmers are not solely motivated by stock options and money.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I think a lot of coders want to make a difference.
Absolutely.
That's why they go to USDS.
That's totally true.
Although you guys pay huge salaries.
We can pay up to $164,000 as part of the government. So that's, you don't have to sacrifice to come.
That's
help.
Actually not so bad.
No, to make your government work better.
That's pretty cool. And what is a typical term of service?
An average person is now staying for a year and 7 months, eight months. Yeah. So you can come for 3 to 6 months. I signed up for a 6 month tour.
You see what happened to him.
That was 2.5 years ago. So we warn you up front, we will do commitment escalation, but but you can stay for 2 years and then you can be renewed for another 2 year term.
That's pretty cool.
We've got some people who are just finishing up their 4 year terms.
And can I call myself Colonel afterwards?
afterwards you can call yourself whatever you want. You can do whatever you want on your last day of the job.
I will grow a little goatee and wear a little bolo tie and white suit, call myself Colonel Laporte. I'm a Colonel Laporte. I'll never forget those days I worked in the service of our nation. Colonel Cutts. Here's the two iOS 0 days. Mm-hmm. This is why it's so important to install 12.1.4. This is the great Google project. What is it? Zero Project Zero, they call it. Ben Hawks, team leader at Project Zero. They didn't reveal what the hack was, but these are 0 days that are already in the wild. That is pretty bad. And so if you are an iOS user and you haven't yet installed 12.1.4, you might want to do that quickly. 0 days mean that they are exploited at the same time as they've been learned about. There's no time between the information.
Yeah, and if you're interested in security stuff, I think Google just open sourced ClusterFuzz, which is their
their
fuzzing application. You know, fuzzing is sending garbage into an application to see if you can crash it. And I think ClusterFuzz can scale up to like 25,000 machines. So they use that to test out Chrome and all sorts of
fuzzing
stuff.
Fuzzing is all the rage among the hackers.
People love to fuzz.
They love to fuzz. Well,
ClusterFuzz is a great name. That really is a great name. Now that you explain what it does, I'm really appreciating the branding there.
The security people have a good sense of humor. They really do.
There is, now this is an interesting, as long as we're talking about Apple exploits, and I don't know whether this is genuine or not, but there is a security researcher who has found a Mac OS exploit to access keychain passwords, a lot of important stuff in there, but is out of protest, refusing to share it with Apple. Linus Hunze has publicly shared iOS vulnerabilities in the past, so we know he's credible. He's frustrated that Apple's bug bounty program does not apply to macOS. It only applies to iOS.
Really?
Yeah, this has been why. In fact, Apple only recently had a bug bounty program for a long time. And I kind of understand their point of view that if we start paying people for bugs, it escalates it. It makes it more expensive. Already, governments, foreign governments are paying people for bugs. We don't want to get in the business. But if you don't pay for bugs, maybe you don't hear about them.
Yeah.
So he's decided not to tell people about his keychain exploit. It's called the Key Steal.
And, but he put a demo, a video demo.
Oh, yeah, there's a video. Of course.
Wow, this is a lot of extortion in this episode.
This is the extortion episode. Be a shame if those pictures leaked out. I'm just saying.
Be a shame if New York didn't welcome Amazon.
Wasn't the name
arms.
Of the Medium post, though, really good? Honestly.
Oh, no thanks.
No thanks, Mr. Pecker.
Yeah.
No thank you, Mr. Pecker. All right, I said I wasn't going to talk about it, and I'm not. No thanks, Mr. Pecker. You know what we should do? We should make the title of the show, No Thanks, Mr. Pecker. And then everybody would listen to the show all the way to the end and say, well, wait a minute.
You didn't talk about it. Bait and switch.
I want to take a little break, and then I have to laugh at Microsoft because they've done the silliest thing I've ever heard of. You talked about it before the show. Mm-hmm. Matt Cutts.
Oh, it's a great story.
Yes. It's a tease. Although, you know, I just want to say, Spotify, you could put in ad blockers, but there's no way you could prevent people from fast-forwarding through the ad. And so teases really don't work in podcasts because anybody who wants to hear what we're talking about has already skipped this part.
They'll miss the good stuff.
You're right missing now. The good stuff. Now, quick, come up with something good. Huh? Let's roll the promo.
Previously on Twit.
I still, even though I haven't done carts or DJed in years, still have nightmares that your headphones are wrapped around your head and you can't reach the cart and the song's ending and the record. Do you ever have dreams like that, Carson? Like
those are not the Leo dreams I have.
Okay, back to the change log.
All about Android.
We've got questions, Michelle. And you have to imagine a lot of people are wishing they had what you have, which is a very early build of Android Q.
So Google is adding a new category of permissions called roles. What I think Google is planning on doing is the user says, I want this app to have this role. Then all the other permissions that are relevant to that role will be automatically granted. So say like you have a gallery app, you want it to have the gallery role. Then it'll automatically be granted any permission that's relevant to gallery apps.
That's cool. Hands-on tech.
Does Tesla have some serious competition from Jaguar's all-wheel drive luxury crossover, the I-Pace?
This feels like a Jaguar. This feels pretty nice.
It does, yeah. Jaguar, they're starting to build EVs, but they want to make them so that they fit in with the rest of their lineup.
Twit. Test drive one today.
Let me talk about WordPress, because I am a big WordPress fan. I got my 12-year badge just the other day at WordPress.com. 12 years I've been using WordPress.com. And I started using WordPress before WordPress.com existed. When Matt Mullenweg first created it, I was looking for a great tool for my website that would make it easy. At the time I called it a blogging tool, but really it's a professional-grade content management system that allows you to easily post, create a website, make it look beautiful, put in all the features you want, including e-commerce, as simply as possible. That's WordPress.com. And what a success. WordPress powers 33% of the internet. One-third of the entire net is running on WordPress. I think that's as good a success as you can get.
It powers my site.
Me too. LeoLaporte.com. And I'm on WordPress.com for a long time. When it first came out, there wasn't a WordPress.com. I was, I had to buy a server. I had to provision it. Of course, I spent most of my time like messing around with it, trying to get plugins to work, getting the security to work. When WordPress.com came along, I realized not only am I saving money, it's less expensive, I'm saving time. They keep it secure. They keep it up to date. So you can pursue what you love. You can create your own site without being a geek, without wasting time on any of that. Just put your time into the content. And the other thing I love about WordPress, it's your site. It's your content. It's not Mark Zuckerberg's content. It's not Jack's content. It's your content, and that means you can upload text, audio, video, music, photos to your WordPress site, download it anytime you want, it's always under your control. I think that's so important. Everybody, I know, yes, if you're a business, you should have a Facebook page and a Twitter feed and all that, but you also need your own place, your own site that everything links back to. That's your WordPress.com site. It was started so anyone could publish their ideas, and I think it's really been a huge success. No two-week trials, no hidden fees. Users own their own content. I actually do the business plan because I want a lot. I mean, those features are so great. No, everybody gets help 24 hours a day, including weekends, from not just customer support people reading a notebook, but actual WordPress experts. WordPress.com. Flexible, powerful. Some of the biggest companies on the earth use it to build their websites. Some of us little guys, too. I love WordPress. Go to WordPress.com/twit. You can get 15% off any new plan purchase right now. WordPress.com/twit. WordPress.com/twit. And if you go to Matt's site,
you go to Matt
Cutts' site,
mattcutts.com/blog.
You will see the one and only Matt Cutts as a lobster.
So one of the things.
Oh, I'm sorry. That's a crab.
It's a crab.
How could I be so wrong?
One of the things that we have at the U.S. Digital Service is this idea of crab claws, because when you've got somebody on the phone, you don't want to be like clapping real loud and mess up the audio. And so when we do these crab claws, it's become a thing, and so now I had to dress up as a crab.
I've got to visualize this. So you got a bunch of people, they're on the phone talking to people, and you want to applaud, but you don't. So you go like this?
Well, you applaud so that you don't annoy the people who are on the phone. So you'll see these big staff meetings, and everybody's going,
oh, in the meeting.
Great job.
I see.
Yeah, like all hands.
If they're on conference calls, and it just sounds annoying.
Yeah. So, great job.
What about finger
snapping? We do the soft clap, but I think I want to take crab just claws. Do the crab claws. You're going to have to do it.
So the strange thing is, this is also, I think, sign language for no. So a lot of people are like, what? Are you saying we're talking too much? Is that the problem?
That's
so
nice.
We didn't pick it that well.
And but this was your Halloween costume?
It was.
Matt, you are the cutest person alive.
You really, really are. That's
how could you look at this picture and not say, that is the cutest person alive.
Boy, I'd really like to work with that person. They seem like they've got their life together, huh?
Ladies and gentlemen, you too could work for this guy. Colonel Cutts.
Colonel
Krabby Cutts.
By the way, the back was like a backpack, so you could slip some liquor or something because it zipped up. You could smuggle a bunch of stuff in your carapace. I don't know
what. Oh, wow. Carapace not included. Wow. That is so. Did you wear it to work?
I did not. I could have, but I decided, you know, I'll just put this on at home.
What do people do like at the Department of Defense on Halloween? Do they come in costumes?
Some people do.
Really?
Some people do. Yeah. Well, you know, whenever we walk around the Pentagon, we wear hoodies, and that is enough of a costume.
That's terrifying.
People don't know what to make of us.
That's terrifying. Hoodies, you know, and flip flops.
Because you're in suit culture in country there. Oh, yeah.
That is, it is suit culture for
you're
sure.
In, you're yeah. in, egg, scrambled uniform eggs, four-star uniform right. country. Right. Yeah. Microsoft begs you to stop using Internet Explorer. Oh, my God. This is not your grandpa's Microsoft. They're also putting out a series of cringy ads featuring twins suggesting you shouldn't use Office 2019 anymore.
Huh. What?
Oh, you got to see these ads.
What? I mean, it's cool that Microsoft is saying get rid of Internet Explorer, because all of us are saying get rid of Internet Explorer.
Yeah, who was it? The guy who does Internet Explorer said, no, it's not a browser. It's a compatibility layer.
Compatibility solution.
What is that? What?
That is so bad.
So this
his argument was that you use it when you have a application or something that you created internally that – from back in the day,
you have to use.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Runs on Internet Explorer.
So
and that's
every version
that's
of Windows, including the latest, comes with Internet Explorer. But you're not, but they right. hide it. You're not supposed to use it.
So what do you use? Naive question. Is it Edge? Like what is the brand?
Maybe not Edge, because we're going to change that too.
We're going to make it Chrome.
It's Chrome, basically.
It's right.
So Chrome ships with Windows now?
No. They're using the Chrome engine. They're using the Chromium, we should say. Chromium engine.
Chromium, like the open Edge.
Yeah. They're abandoning Edge's engine. And in fact, somebody on the Edge team said, come on, Firefox. You join the crowd. Stop trying to distribute a non-standard browser engine. One engine to rule them all. Which, again, as you know, I'm not a fan of monocultures. That seems Firefox, don't listen to them. It's all about engulf and devour. These are the new Microsoft Office ads. We gave identical twins identical tasks to see the difference between Office 2019 and Office 365. Fill a spreadsheet with data about all 50 states. So they're both using Surfaces. One had Excel data types thanks to Office 365. One didn't.
All right.
They're literally telling you don't buy Office 2019. Wow. They still sell it for all people who have to have a box of Office.
What? You did all 50?
There's going to need to be a time lapse video.
Alabama.
I don't know. Is this compelling? Does it make you want to run out? Buy Office? I think they want people to subscribe is the point instead of buying the package. So don't use Edge. Don't use Internet Explorer, and please don't buy Office.
Don't buy Office 2019.
Right.
And it's February. It's February still.
February. It's not that it's old. It's that it's in a box.
Yeah, get a Mac.
Get a Mac. When Microsoft does a get a Mac ad.
Oh. It could bring back the people.
It feels like John they're Hodgman. Headed that way. Hmm. Yeah.
That's right.
Although,
that's
right. Although, hey, right, props to a company that has learned how to get back to being a platform company and doesn't care as they much care. About selling the Windows and the desktop. Like, if the software is available on whatever your phone is, like, that's progress.
One of the first
Satya
things
Nadella has brought progress.
One of the first things Nadella did is make a touch first Office, not for Windows, but for iPad.
Yeah.
That was the first appearance of a touch first Office. Mm-hmm. And people thought, you know, hell's frozen over.
Yeah.
But it's worked. I mean, I guess it's worked. He's tripled the stock price in 5 years. That's pretty good.
Whenever they bought GitHub, people weren't, you know, running and screaming. And
I think that's over, right? I mean, as developers, you guys still, GitHub's fine, right? Yeah. Even if Microsoft owns it.
It's fine. I forgot about it. I was like, right, yeah, they did that. I actually forgot.
Yeah, it doesn't say Microsoft GitHub all over it or anything like that.
It does not.
They did the same thing with LinkedIn. I think they've been pretty smart about their acquisitions. I could do without the hearts in Skype. So
it would be so much better if it showed the emoji, though.
I know. Why does it just goes blue instead of showing the emoji? In the chat, it shows the emoji, but we don't see the
chat.
So I've been yelling and screaming about two things: Verizon pretending they like first responders, and AT&T saying they have 5GE. There's actually people who think 5GE is better than 5G, when in fact it's LTE. 4G. Sprint is suing. Sprint is going after AT&T, saying this damages our legitimate 5G rollout. They might have a point there. I think it was very cynical of AT&T, even though everybody, they said, yeah, we know it's not 5G, but we're going to, if you get the new iOS 12.1.4, or is it 12.2? It might be 12.2. You'll see 5GE on your phone, even though there literally is no such thing.
It makes you feel like it's faster.
It seems so
much
faster.
It's like the placebo effect for your network.
Well, and this is, they did this when birth of LTE.
Oh, yeah, HSPA Plus. They called it 4G.
Was really rolled out.
Yeah.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Right, right. In a bunch of blog posts, I referred to it as FOG, F-A-U-X-G. And that's exactly what they're doing, the exact same thing. They're just true to form.
Well, we're going to be on 8G by Halloween. I
mean, it's AT&T's response: we understand why our competitors don't like what we're doing, but our customers love it.
See? People love 8G.
People love 8G. We introduced 5G Evolution more than 2 years ago. Well, that should tell you something. Clearly defining it as an evolutionary step to a standards-based 5G. Mm-hmm. 5G Evolution and 5GE indicators simply let customers know when their device is in an area where speeds up to twice as fast are available. You're not going to get it, but that's what 5G Evolution is, and we're delighted. delighted to deliver it to our customers. We will fight this lawsuit while continuing to deploy 5GE. In addition to the standards-based mobile 5G, customers want and deserve to know when they're getting better speeds. But they're not. Sprint will have to reconcile its arguments to the FCC that it cannot deploy a widespread 5G network without T-Mobile, while simultaneously claiming in this suit to be launching legitimate 5G technology imminently. It would be a shame if your merger would be damaged. Another one. Another one. Oh, Lord.
Oh, we just hit 16G. I just saw that.
Oh, word. Thank
they
you.
Just doubled 8G.
Thank you, AT&T. Yeah. Man, are they good. They are so good.
So when real 5G comes and they take the E off,
it'll seem like
be
less.
Upset because yeah. It's less.
It's less.
I don't have my E.
Where'd the E go?
They're Where's my E?
5G plus. G plus. That won't have any negative associations.
5GA actual.
I know you're hip, Gina. Did you go 5G actual?
5G actual.
Actual. 5G really?
5G for reals.
For reals.
For reals.
I like it.
Pure 5G.
5GZ.
Pure. Turbo.
Did you go watch Marshmello perform in Fortnite? 10 million people did.
I love that you think that I'm hip still, Leo. That's
come on. I know you danced the night away.
I don't even know what any of those words mean.
Oh. Well.
No, I've heard of Fortnite.
Ask your daughter. She'll know.
Yeah, she'll know.
Soon she'll know. Soon she'll be saying, "Mommy, I want to dance with Marshmello." So I'm just preparing you for your future.
It's good to know.
Yeah.
It's good to know.
Yeah. It was, you know, pretty massive. The largest streaming audience ever in Fortnite. And it really points to me the fact that Fortnite has an opportunity here to become kind of almost the next Facebook, the next social site for young'uns.
An opportunity to become the next Second Life.
It's exactly like Second Life.
Yes,
right?
Second Life.
With
exactly.
Guns. Second Life with
guns. Second Life with guns.
Yeah.
What could be wrong with that?
Oh, I look forward to my future.
If you've wondered where your old iPhone is going, well, Tokyo says it's going into our 2020 Olympic medals. They want to make the medals entirely from recycled gold, silver, and bronze from recycled smartphones and other electronic devices. E-waste.
How many phones would it take to make one medal? I'm guessing a lot.
Five million.
Wow.
5 million.
That's a lot of phones.
But there's a lot of old phones lying around, right?
True.
They need... Okay, so they've already started. They collected 5 million disused phones at NTT Docomo stores, okay. Post offices, other public buildings. Last June, they already got 2,700 kilograms of bronze.
Wow.
They're 93% of the way to their 30 kilograms of gold and 85% to their 41 kilograms of silver.
Wow.
Pretty cool.
Huh. I love this.
Yeah.
Is there anything about this to be outraged about? I love this.
No, there's nothing wrong with this.
It's great.
It's exactly. Well, people forget that there's actually precious metals in these electronics. All of our electronics have gold in them.
Yeah.
Although I wonder what the process is to extract it. Like, can we complain about the energy that it would take to extract it?
I'm sure it's more expensive. But maybe not.
And the chemicals used to extract it.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And the small Chinese children used to extract it.
That's right.
No, they're not. No, they're not. They're not doing that.
Didn't Apple display a robot that took apart its iPhone?
Liam. Mm-hmm.
And so, Liam, right. Right. So maybe they don't need small Chinese children.
Well, there's only one Liam. That's the problem.
Apparently there's a new one called Daisy.
Oh, Daisy.
Yeah.
Oh, Daisy. Daisy can take apart, oh my God, 200 iPhones an hour.
Wow.
Wow.
Huh.
Wow. That's 200 iPhones an hour. That's what, 2,400 iPhones a day? That's a whopping, I don't know, I have to do the math, but it's something like, what, 10,000 iPhones a year? I think there's a few more than that lying around. How many Daisies are they? Are there? That's the question.
It's going to take a while to make the medals.
I was going to say, does Daisy scale?
Does Daisy scale?
Well, you know what? You just put a bunch together and you can daisy chain them.
Oh!
Oh!
On that note, I'm here all week.
I'm cutting you off, Cuts.
It hurts.
Colonel Cuts, give us your plug for the United States Digital Service.
All right. My plug is this. Every time I come out to San Francisco, I see people doing meal kit delivery software. I see people doing cryptocurrencies. And I can tell you, you can come to DC and make a huge impact to help out farmers, doctors, patients, students, veterans, military service member, people who need Social Security. You can make those services work better for people who need them. And there are millions of people that need assistance. You know, we just rolled out something last week where if you're an asylum seeker, there's 300,000 people in the backlog. If you wanted to know where you were in that backlog, you had to go in person or fax or, you know, email somebody.
Right.
And that's now crazy. You can go to a website and you can type in your receipt number and you can get back the status of your case online. So this is not necessarily rocket science, but it really helps people who want to make it, you know, who want to have a good interaction with the U.S. government.
And what kind of skill sets are you looking for?
That's a great question. We need engineers. We need product managers. We need designers. And we even need, like, we're looking for technical recruiters and could use a lawyer or two. It turns out how things work in the law really matters for, you know, making things work well.
I think there's nowadays so much distrust in government, and it's a chance for you to participate in a way that makes a big difference.
What has been remarkable to me is the number of people who said, I'm going to come for 6 months and then I'm going to go back to the Facebooks, the Amazons, the Twitters, the Apples. And they either stay or they will take a left turn and they're like doing a startup in the civic tech space or they're helping at the state level.
Because it's satisfying writing code that makes a difference, I'm sure.
It really is. It is the hardest, most meaningful job that I have ever done.
If you're working for a big tech company, will some tech companies allow you to take a leave of absence to do this and come
Absolutely.
Back?
In fact, Microsoft is one of the leaders. One of the person, the CIO of Microsoft, his name is Kurt Del Bene. He's the CIO of Microsoft. He helped with healthcare.gov. So he came back. He put a civic leave program in place. If you're a Microsoft person, if you're a Google person, a lot of these companies have civic leave programs.
If you're still working on an Internet Explorer at Microsoft, you might want to think about this.
Come help save some people's lives. We need the help.
U.S. Digital Service, usds.gov/join. And I think this is always such a pleasure to see you, Matt.
So nice
you're doing
to be here.
Such
Thank
good
you.
Work, and you're so cute in that crab costume. Thank you for being here. Gina Trapani, I can't tell you how much we miss you on Twit. Every week on Twig, we say, where is Gina? Where is Gina? I'll tell you where she is. She's managing partner at postlight.com. Check them out if you need programming for an app or a website, if you need some custom code. Imagine having the best do it. Design, develop, ship, postlight.com. Gina.
Yeah, get in touch. Thank you for having me. This was so much fun. I'm so glad I got to join you, Leo, and Matt, and Dwight. This is a lot of fun. We're going to do this more often. It's been too long.
Careful if you say that. You're going to break my heart if you don't, because I want you to back anytime you want. Anytime. You could just call me and say, I want to be on, and you'd be on like that. All of you.
You're on.
Yeah.
You're on.
Same goes for Dwight Silverman. I feel so fortunate to be able to work with so many great people for so many years. And Dwight, you're one of them. I really appreciate it.
I was looking up I think there's a Twit wiki out there, and I was looking up when I first was on, and I was kind of I don't remember now when it was, but I was kind of astonished as to how long I'd been doing this. And now I've been doing this enough that I'm kind of like one of the most frequent guests that you've had over the years.
Isn't that
so
great?
I feel like I'm part of the family, and I love doing it.
Yeah. Well, y'all should come back every week. We really appreciate your being here. And we certainly say the same for you, our fabulous audience. You could be in the studio. We had a great studio audience today. Tim and Paula visiting from Traverse City, Michigan, and Evan from San Jose, and Brian from San Francisco, and Yuval visiting from Palo Alto. He's just relocated there. It's great to have you in studio. All you have to do is email tickets at twit.tv. We'll make a chair out, put a chair out there for you, and we'd love to have you if you're up in the Petaluma area. Of course, you can also watch live at our stream. That's twit.tv/live audio, or you can listen live, audio or video, twit.tv/live. If you are participating live, definitely go into the chat room at irc.twit.tv. That's where all the other kids who are participating live hang out, making fun of Colonel Krabby Cuts.
it's a good chat channel.
It's a great chat
good channel.
irc.twit.tv. And of course, we do make all our shows available on demand. All you have to do is go to twit.tv, our website. Or, you know, fire up Spotify or Stitcher or Slacker or Pocket Cast or iTunes or Google Podcasts or any podcast app. You can even ask your voice assistant, hey, Echo, listen to This Week in Tech, and it'll play the most recent version. Subscribe, and you'll get every version the minute it's available. That's nice. Every show, the minute it's available. Thank you for being here. We'll see you next time. Another Twit is in the can. Bye-bye.